advise you to get off the streets as quickly as possible. It'll soon be a war up there.
And we are, as a people, opposed to secret societies, to secret oaths.
I know for a fact.
And to secret proceedings.
Weapons of mass destruction.
I have a dream.
I take the threat very seriously.
A new world order.
Your government thanks you for your participation.
You are now listening to the world-famous Sofa King Podcast.
Please, read from sheets. I am Sofa King.
Sofa King.
Now repeat all very fast, please.
I am Sofa King.
Faster.
I am Sofa King.
No, not so fast. Loses meaning.
I am Sofa King with me, Todd.
You say funny things.
I take my aggressions out. Yeah. Well, that was a very small amount of aggression.
I know. It's like a bitch slap.
Yeah.
He does it often just to keep it low.
Yeah.
He'll break shit.
Yeah. That does happen.
Ooh, there's a little bit left in there.
You know, as much as I try to hate Starbucks for corporate malfeasance,
you love them?
I sure do love them.
There's a lot of stuff about like it. That, man.
They just have... It's just, I mean, I think my love for them like went up exponentially when they opened one literally 100 yards from my house.
There's one 200 yards from my
house. Why are these fucking
too.
Starbucks on every fucking corner? Ooh, there's one across from my house.
That's super convenient. Yeah. Like, I have a cup of coffee every time I go anywhere. It's right there.
You walk through a Starbucks into another Starbucks. Yeah. Like, they're two different stores.
It's like the mirrors and a dressing room. Have you been anywhere? They're across the street from each other?
Yeah, I have.
Yeah. They're usually like in a parking lot. And then they're in a Vons or an Albertsons or something.
Well, I've been
in
on
the same
on a corner.
Real ones.
Because you want to get, you don't want to have to cross
both
the street.
Sides of traffic.
Yeah. You don't have to turn around. They don't have to, you know, makes it easy.
Because I bought when we were in Hawaii, the coffee, it was hard to find good coffee in the hotel. And I ended up saying, fuck it, and went down to the Starbucks in the lobby and I bought a pack of the Christmas Vias, the Christmas roast Vias.
Is that stuff good?
It's fucking delicious.
Yeah, is it? No.
Like, it's really fucking good.
This is the powder pack, the little Via thing.
Yep, I just mixed
it. It's powder?
This motherfucker's hot.
It's hot.
It's like their instant coffee. But
yes.
How are they making it?
Oh, yeah.
Like, it's crystals. Or it's like Folgers crystals, but for Starbucks.
Yeah, take a sip. I gotta admit.
It's a little, I don't know, something tastes weird, like dinner-y. I don't know what to say.
Because it might be a dirty ass
like
cup.
I've said that before. Like, your coffee tastes like a full meal. There's a little cafeteria-esque like thing going on.
Like, it's not like the world's greatest cup of coffee, but it's better than their typical medium roast.
Mm-hmm.
Like, it's.
I don't like any of their standard roasts.
No,
that's
no. But they always have something popping. Anyway,
I did see my wife got a package and I saw it. She's like, oh, dang it! I thought you weren't going to be here. And then she like. And I didn't see it. Like, I had another package with it.
She proceeded to ruin it.
Yeah, and then she showed the box, and I was like, oh, if you would have just taken it, I wouldn't even have saw what was on the box. But it was a Black Rifle Coffee. So I don't know how many bags she got me. But it might have just been one bag. But I was like, oh, sweet. I got some good coffee. Because their shit's good. Their shit is good.
I like
good.
All coffee with the exception of Ambience.
Ah, there's some
that
gross
fucking,
coffee.
Whatever the Ambience shit is from Smart.
It's like
literally
Maxwell
tastes
House,
like hot coffee. Cardboard.
There's like Maxwell House. Like,
I've never had that, but.
Yeah, I did have some of that Folgers. What's the silk that you drink?
Black silk.
It's okay. It's like a good breakfast coffee.
And that's the thing. Like, I don't. All I ever drink is just black, dark coffee. And Starbucks does it.
I mean, my son's three and he's drinking coffee. Like, he drinks coffee.
He said that. That might be a bad decision.
Like, forward. There's nothing wrong with it.
No,
I don't think so. Like, I'll give him milk in the morning.
Cake out.
Well, I'll give him milk in the morning, you know, like he'll want milk because I think it kind of just coats his stomach or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
And I put it in a sippy cup and then he's like, I want coffee. And I'm like, all right. And I just pour some coffee in his milk.
I mean, that's science.
And he's
exactly.
No sweetener.
The milk coat before the coffee.
Yeah.
Doctors can't even argue with that.
So when he's four, when he's getting low on the coffee, you just top it off with whiskey.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
He's had whiskey.
Yeah.
Science.
You gotta put him to sleep.
Yeah.
I don't know. Anyway. Oh, speaking of questions, did you say questions?
We did.
Yeah, I did.
Did you?
Last episode.
So Leighton Trick.
At some point in time.
Leighton Trick had a question.
Leighton Trick?
Leighton Trick.
Okay.
Have you seen his Instagram, Brent?
I can't say that I have.
He's shared like five or six of our posts.
Mm-hmm.
So you might want to check.
So he's deserving
out.
Of it, yeah.
Yeah, he might be deserving of a prize. Okay. I went on and looked at it, and I was like, oh, wow.
Oh, that's funny. I just sent you that.
Is that who that
is? Yeah, I sent you a screen capture of his Instagram.
Oh, well, there you go. See? There,
yeah. Did you do that directly to me, or you did that
on the radar?
I did that directly to you.
How weird.
That is on the radar.
I was going to say, well, Dave had one too, but I didn't want to name another one because I was like, yeah. I had enough prizes on my hand.
So good.
You guys are picking separate. I like this guy.
Good looking out, Lightning Trick. You did some good
hustle. You're on the radar, but he did have a question. He submitted it. He is a D&D group dungeon master,
mm-hmm.
One of the very few transgender DMs in the U.S.
Mm-hmm.
So he says,
TGDM,
mm-hmm. That's correct. You fell into a trap. A net made of rope has scooped you into the trees. Mm-hmm. A giant approaches with the intent of a proper fucking. You A, cut your way out and face the giant or the human. wait, hold on. I'm messing up the thing. Hold on. So, A, you cut your way out to face the human anal-tearing giant with only your dull knife. B, you let the giant remove you from the net and then try and escape his clutches. Or C, you surprise the giant by fucking him first.
I'm going with C myself.
I mean, it entirely depends on what class I'm playing.
Okay.
I mean, if I'm playing a barbarian, I go with C.
Okay.
Because I think I can overpower him. If I'm playing a rogue.
Uh-huh.
I'll probably go with B because then I can perhaps make a tumble move. Actually, I would go with A.
Okay.
Because then I could tumble and escape and cut my way out, make an escape, you know, an escape attempt.
Okay.
And then B is going to be trickier. Maybe if you're a fighter, you might be able to overpower him and do that.
Let's say you're B a barbarian. So barbarian, you said C?
Barbarian, I said C.
Okay, yeah. We'll go with that. So both of you guys are at C.
Mm-hmm.
So the problem is the giant would have let you go. He's only into women.
Oh.
So you fucked him for no reason.
I enjoyed it. I did the same
although
thing.
You,
I did the same
I don't
thing
know
bear
if you,
attack.
Did you gender the giant?
Huh? No, I would assume he's male.
What sort of cartoon for kids called Gender the Giant?
Yeah. Gender the Giant. Yeah. So, all right. Well, so that was a little D&D fun from Leighton Trick, who apparently... Is he getting something now? Is that what, was that a thing?
Apparently, yeah. Congratulations. I will decide what you get
right on.
After the show.
Yeah. Something we'll give you a unisex shirt.
He even clinks.
He clinks.
Oh, he's got the clinks.
Oh,
water
that's
bottle.
The guy.
Yeah, yeah.
That's
oh, okay.
The guy that clinks the water
I did,
bottle.
Yeah,
okay.
I saw him,
all right.
Yeah.
All right.
Real handsome.
Sounds good.
Yeah.
And
he's tall.
So I
wears clothes, has hair, and
cute baby.
Mm-hmm.
And we're missing. I didn't pick a Tekko winner because it was on the sheet.
Sorry, we got one.
Okay.
Yeah.
So that's what I thought.
Find it. If I have it.
So
it's at the bottom.
So the hot box winner is WJ double U Y O U J. Facebook posted a picture of Keto Chimichanga.
Because his wife wanted him to win. Happy wife, happy life.
Oh,
so we had
that's
to,
true.
We, yeah.
That's true. Happy wife, happy life.
Trying to help
life.
A dude out.
Or you could kill her and then you'll be. You'd be set. Like you'd be.
Or you do what she said, hope you win, then kill her.
That too. Yeah. And then you can fuck her and she won't say a word.
Wow.
I'm not sure about their keto chimichanga.
It can happen. I made some shit like that.
I just like that's what's and
the,
that's a
the,
thing.
I made keto enchiladas.
Is a
so,
fried tortilla shell.
I'm telling you, I used chicharrones and smashed them and put it on parchment paper and then cover that with grated cheese. Then put more chicharrones.
It's kind of like the tofurkey,
mixed
though.
It and then
like,
baked it and then you can roll it or layer it between enchiladas or make rolled enchiladas and it's super close to corn tortillas.
So Dave hasn't had turkey in so long. He thinks the tofurkey tastes like turkey.
True.
You are rolling up some bullshit.
I'm telling you,
trying to turn it into a chimichanga, and that's okay. If it tastes good
it,
for
man.
You, it's
right.
it's
you
awesome.
It.
But
right.
it ain't a chimichanga.
I could have
like,
tricked you.
Come on,
right?
That's coming from the man who made ribs that taste like fried chicken.
But at least
I'm
take,
telling you, it can
at
happen.
Least, hey. At least take the step that Tofurky did and change the name and call it like a chichachanga.
Yeah.
Oh, chichachanga.
A
keto, I like it.
Chichachanga.
Look no further.
So, I mean,
mission accomplished.
Then I don't have a. Then I have no umbrage.
Chichachanga.
There you go.
That's it. Chichachanga.
I have no problems with
it. Okay, we looked a little further.
Yeah.
And put the gravy on top of those potatoes.
All right. So double WJ. I'm sure the giver will be contacting you. As far as that goes, as your hot box or hot sack or whatever we decide to send. So
it might be a box in a sack.
Mm-hmm.
I'm going to do that now.
Yeah.
Might be a box. Yeah. It might be a sack in a box. Sack in a box. It's Sacagawea's sister.
Yeah. It was.
Yeah. Yeah. That's what they had back in the day. Instead of Jack in the Box, they had Sack in a Box.
Sack in a Box is where you teabag someone and then punch them.
Sack in a Box, yeah.
Sack into the box.
Yeah. Sack into the box. Yeah. That's what that is, yeah.
Yeah.
Or you can force your sack into their box.
Yeah.
That's impressive.
Yeah. The crazy one.
You have to hot scissor to do it.
Sack into the tie box. Sack into the tie box. That's where you get into tie kickboxing or something. You
know? I was getting sexual.
Elbows and shit.
Yeah, I was waiting for you to get sexual with the tie box move.
Pummeling someone turns me on.
That's where it's a lady boy sit hot scissor, where you stuff it
hot
in.
Hot scissor.
You have to lift up their wing to put your sack inside their box.
Upside down, you just let it hang down.
Sauce involved?
Yeah, there can be. It's optional.
That sounds good.
Speaking of optional, I went to the UPS store to ship some stuff, and the girl was like, having me fill out the stuff, and she said, you can do this if you want, but it's optionary.
Ooh, optionary.
Ooh, optionary.
And I told her, said, it's funny you say that because it's not a fucking word. But we use words in an improper way.
Uh-huh.
And she started laughing. And so then I filled out all this shit and I forgot to initial in some
spot. Insulted her and then made her laugh.
Yeah. And then I was like, she's like, oh, you didn't initial. I was like, I was under the impression it was optionary. And then used her word back at her.
And then, she should have said you didn't initiate.
And then she tried to play the game back at me and she had like Christmas lights all over that were like actually blinking and lit up. She's like, well, tell your friends I'm lit. And I was like, I'm going to tell them you're luminary. And then I walked out.
Yeah.
Yeah. Sounds good with that. But optionary, I'm going to add to my.
Yeah, that's
optionary.
Good. Yeah. I like all that word.
It should be a word.
Yeah.
I heard some wordplay on Reddit this week that I thought was, I've never heard this term before, and maybe you two have, and maybe I thought it was far funnier than I should have thought it was, but there's a subreddit called Tifu, T-I-F-U, which is time I fucked up, and you're supposed to post within like 24 hours, like some momentous thing that you just did to fuck up, and this guy made a post about him filming a Snapchat of him masturbating and coming to send to his girlfriend, and he sent it to his group's, his work group Snapchat.
Yes. You can't delete those?
Well, it deletes it.
It deletes
it after people look at it.
Yeah, but I mean, if everybody already saw it, you know.
Oh, man.
But he tells the whole story, and in the middle of it.
I gotta get it out of my phone. Yeah, gotta get it out of there.
Snapchatty.
In the middle of it, he said that it was an impressive video by his own standards because it even showed him release his high fructose porn syrup.
Oh, nice. Never heard that.
Never heard that before. Oh, and I had to I can't remember the user's name, but I had to give him credit for that.
That's some Canadian shit right there.
Maybe.
High fructose porn syrup.
Yeah, I thought that was
Canadian
pretty good.
Shit. So our Sculpt Member of the Month for December, Dante Bridges.
Mm-hmm.
Used to model underwear until he did unrepairable damage to the area near his growing, destroying any future he had in it. He actually slipped and fell on the runway and got a compound fracture of the femur that tore his skin up by his panty line. It left a scar that looks like his ex-girlfriend's vagina, almost reminiscent of a pastrami sandwich.
That's a bad accident.
Pastrami sandwiches make me uncomfortable. Yeah. It's meat curtains all
run,
day.
Runways are dangerous.
Yeah.
Yeah. Runways are dangerous.
Runway. Yeah. That's what they say.
I mean, to walk down there and then like pop and stop and spin without turning your man parts.
Is the spin optionary or is it mandatory? Is it mandatory?
I think it's mandatory. I think it's mandible.
It's mandible.
Yeah. Yeah. So we have a whiskey.
We do.
We have a whiskey from Jeremy Pepper.
Oh, yeah.
It is called Wyoming Whiskey, which is it's a small batch whiskey made in Colorado, ironically.
I just had deja vu then.
We had it last time that we were here,
we didn't drink it.
Yeah.
Wait a minute. We had it, but we didn't drink it?
It was here, but we did not drink it.
It was, okay. That makes sense. It was on the desk. You're not making sense.
Yep. So.
Because I make dollars.
That's fine.
Jeremy Pepper. I don't know how many Scovilles.
That's a fucking pour right there. David got the pour.
No, Brad's got the pour.
I'm the least right now.
Are you? It's because you already had some.
Wow.
Super smooth.
That is really good.
Oh, that's got a good second hit.
Damn.
There was a weird first taste, though.
It's like a cinnamony.
Mm-hmm.
It's hot.
Not sweet cinnamon. That's the difference.
Yeah.
Yeah, I had like a second hit of goodness.
Mm-hmm. Damn. There's like vanilla coming in right now at the end. Oh, damn. That's really good. I knew it was going to be good because it's a small bottle.
Yeah, we were talking about it. Yeah, man. Like the Western.
Those fucking Portland whiskeys are
Every time we get one of these small bottles, it's so fucking good.
Wyoming ain't too far from Portland either, from Oregon. You know what I mean?
A, the small bottles come from places we can't get to anyway.
American
and
education.
B, they're small bottles, so it's kind of...
What's in between Wyoming and Oregon? Utah? No.
All my exes.
Isn't it there? Isn't it right next to it? I don't know. I don't know my state geography. It's bad.
No, that's good. Wyoming whiskey. Wow, it's 88 proof, too.
Guy's a baller, man. He's a pilot.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah, and like on a private jet with like Tom Cruise sunglasses and shit.
Idaho.
Real handsome.
What the fuck is that?
Yeah.
No, it's pretty close. It's up there. It's just a little bit over, but...
Damn, that's good whiskey. So, gentlemen,
Utah,
why have we gathered here today?
Mourn the loss
of the dearly departed.
Yeah,
that's a rap line from one of Brad's albums that he'll never let anyone hear.
What was the album called?
What are you talking about?
I don't know. It's Suicide Kings. Will. It was SK. People want that real bad. He's just building up like. People want it, and then he'll sell it through some retractable download that he can take the download back somehow.
I can't.
Why?
Because my buddy Kenneth's on it, and I don't have his approval.
Well, just hit him up.
I don't like him.
Oh, you guys aren't friends anymore?
I don't know. He lives in Hawaii. Oh. Hawaii. Yeah.
That's not far from Wyoming. You can
call
him.
I think he speaks Samoan now or something.
Oh, yeah?
Wyoming's not that far from Oregon. It's right over a little hop over a little...
Little jump over.
Little part of a state. Yeah. It's easy.
Just got to skip a state you want to skip anyway.
Yeah, you don't want to go there. Unless you want multiple wives. So who wants multiple wives?
Me. Oh. Oh, no, not me. Dang. How philanthropal of me. What?
What?
Philanthropal.
Yeah.
Bill Murray.
Yes. Bill motherfucking Murray.
Bill motherfucking Murray.
I said it earlier, I'm saying it again. He's ugly. It's hard to look at. Something's wrong with his face. He looks melted.
He's got, scarring on his face.
What a dick.
What?
He would punch you if you said that.
Yeah, he could try.
I would love to fight Bill Murray.
I would too. I would fight him for sure.
In his prime, though.
I would even let him beat me up.
I wouldn't dare.
Any era.
I'd fight him now.
I don't want to fight him now.
I'd fight him now.
I want to meatballs fight him like back in the day. Like he'd be spry. Forced to be reckoned with.
He'd be spry?
Yeah. Spry.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. What the fuck is that?
It's like Froggy.
Yeah, Froggy.
Are you updating your fucking alphabeticals?
I'm always updating my alphabeticals. Yes.
I feel like, I've been thinking like this last week has really kind of hit me that I haven't really done, like we do this podcast. Well, right. We do this podcast and like, you know, we do some creative stuff, but I've like kind of backed off of doing a lot of things. Like I've been hurt, I've been injured, so I don't go to jiu-jitsu.
Right.
I haven't been painting. I haven't been writing music. I haven't been playing the guitar. I haven't been doing anything creative. Mm-hmm. Like I've gotten in some gaming, like, but it's not really creative. It's just fucking you zone out and fucking game. I haven't been playing Magic. I haven't been writing of any sorts. Mm-hmm. And I almost feel like I'm losing my creativity.
No, it's there.
No, it's there.
Yeah.
But like, it's like dormant.
Right.
And I feel like it's gone. Like, I'm like, I want to do something. It's gone.
No, if you go listen to something you've done too, though. Like if you go listen, you're like, what was that? Who was that? How the fuck did I do that? Like when I just listen to stupid Patreon shout outs, like I'm like, what was going on that mac and cheese shit? What was I doing that day that I was on this weird run saying all that crazy shit or anything like that? It'll probably inspire you if you went and listened to some old shit that you did. If it's going to be music, I don't know.
I've been kind of in this, I mean, I haven't done one creative thing in 58 days.
Like not even like painting.
I like how you have
painting miniature, like painting miniatures, nothing.
No, yeah, writing.
Used to hang out in the shop and do the miniatures.
Nothing.
All the time,
huh? I mean, it literally since the day Vaughn was born. So I can tell you the number of days, and I haven't done anything, and I need to get back into editing the third and final of my book so I can release it. And I'm just like stuck in a rut because I've reread those books 8 billion times, editing them. In the beginning of book three, I've reread a billion times. But the last third, I literally haven't read since I wrote it. Like I just wrote it on a tear and haven't read it. So my plan is to just go in, pick a random chapter towards the end because I'm probably going to be like, what the fuck is going on? Because I wrote it. I was like in the zone
Right.
and wrote it all. So I know I'm going to read it and be like, I'm hoping it's going to make me want to read the whole thing to catch up to where that weird chapter is that I will not have any memory of having written.
Just write a different thing. Just write ago. Like a chapter of a different book and then put it in there.
Oh, there you go.
I think someone does that. They write other book chapters or something to like inspire the style. I feel like we talked about that. Like they just go and
do something else.
Someone else's shit onto paper because it gets the rhythm of that style of writing creativity.
I think it was Bill Murray.
You were talking about that.
Well, it should have been because it's almost Dirty 30, but did you have Yeah. Was there a crescendo?
What?
To your story?
I was just saying like
you have an idea.
Maybe you guys could throw some ideas my way. Just talking about it. Cause I mean,
top of my head, interpretive dance, that's what
I
see.
I do that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I do just like work towards a TED talk on something really obscure.
No, I've never watched a TED talk.
Well, there you go. You won't be influenced.
My advice is actually, it's kind of what Brent said. My advice is to go back to something you've already done and revisit it.
I think I deleted everything.
To polish something up, to put some new touches on it. Cause you're going to look at it and you're going to feel how complete it is and see all the work that went behind it. And you're going to be impressed with yourself in a way.
EDM remix.
At least that's with me with writing, because when I start something, it fucking sucks. And it takes a couple of years before it quits fucking sucking of me editing and revising and polishing. Mm-hmm. So I wouldn't want to just sit down and write something new. Cause every time I write something new, as soon as I'm done, I'm like, that fucking sucks, but it won't suck in 18 months. So it's like, I need to go back to something that I've gone over a million times and reread it. And I'm like, hey, that's actually kind of
decent. How about we emaciate in public for 30 days? There's a little outhouse that we can go poop or pee in. And then we just sit there on like a log and we don't eat. And then every day at like noon in the same place, in the same position, we take a picture of ourselves just to watch ourselves wither away. And then we can see the progress. And then the final result would be art.
I don't know.
I don't know. We should work on that.
I think it's going to jumpstart anything. Yeah.
What was our thing on our alphabeticals? What were we working on?
What?
Updating
your alphabeticals.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So Bill Murray, the topic came up.
When AKA we were doing Melty our, Face. That's what I'm calling him.
When we were doing our bonus episode, because Brent had just watched a documentary.
I don't know if we said it on there or not, but I think
after the fact.
Yeah.
And it was called Bill Murray Stories.
I think so. Yeah.
And if I remember, I'll post a link in the show notes to where you can find it. It's not Netflixable. It's fairly new.
You can watch it on Showbox. If that's against your morals, Dave found a place you can pay for it.
Well, so. You can get it on, you can so pay for it. On, you can pay for it on YouTube. You can pay for it on, Google Play Movies. You can pay for
it. Was it $2.99 or something
to rent? Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. It was like, it was $4 to rent and like $7 to buy. And I always just say, fuck it. I'm going to buy it.
Yeah.
Like, I'm not going to fucking pay half and like only have access to it for 24 hours. Fuck that.
Yeah. Makes sense.
But Bill Murray Stories, and we'll get into the stories, but we'll get into his, I think we should get into those stories chronologically. So we'll go through Bill Murray. But the thing is that I'm sure most listeners probably know is if you Google the idea of Bill Murray Stories, it's because recently, since he's become like this pop culture icon, darling, in the last 10 years or
something crazy where he has like his face has been used on more like products or something than like the Beatles or Michael Jackson or something, or like it's something crazy where he's become such a cultural icon that he's superseded. He's almost like a religious figure.
And and we'll get there, but there was a shift when he did Lost in Translation.
Right.
Up until Lost in Translation, it was comedies and just kind of fairly, I mean, he did a couple of things that were dramas. But Lost in Translation as an indie piece that really blew up and gave him a lot of awards and a lot of recognition, I think he felt that was a more comfortable space to be in than big time Hollywood. So he started to chase indie films and do Wes Anderson stuff and all that kind of stuff. But I think Lost in Translation, he turned a corner, and after Lost in Translation, he starts to do
stuff. He wanted to be more artistic, have more depth, and cover a broader spectrum of characters.
But that's really hard to
than
do
comedy.
Yeah.
But once you're a comic, you
it's
know
really
what I mean?
Hard to,
but he already developed himself. He already had money. You know what I mean? He wasn't chasing the dollar anymore.
No.
At that point,
but
you can say
the public response when you try to do it, they're like, yeah.
But it's like Jim Carrey. He does serious movies, and he's done some fucking dope serious movies. Truman Show is a fucking it's one of my all-time favorite movies. Fantastic movie.
It's still kind of comical though.
There's comedy in it, but it's still a serious movie. Right. I mean, at the end of the day, and I mean, he does serious movies, but I promise you, if he wanted to get another thing like Truman Show made, it would be a major fight.
Yeah. Right.
And if he went to a studio and said, I want to do Ace Ventura 3,
yes,
they'd give him a fucking $100 million dollar budget in 24 hours.
Jim Carrey's kind of on the way to Bill Murrayism too, though.
A little
He's
bit,
fucking gotten like crazy where he just says random shit to the fucking press and like just is wearing like shorts with like paint stains on him and shit, shows up when the fuck he wants, is just doing art. He's kind of headed that way.
They're
he
just like,
pull that
they're
off.
Like, they made it bigger, Tom Green. You know what I mean? Like Tom Green was always the way that they are now.
Right.
Right.
They just, they took a different direction and then now they're becoming
the
Tom Green. Yeah, yeah. They're just fucking weird and eccentric and just, you know, they do weird things and you're like, what the fuck are they doing?
From the beginning, Bill Murray kind of operated on his own accord.
He really
like,
did.
Yeah. Like he wanted to, like when they wanted him for Meatballs, like, or yeah, Meatballs.
Yeah.
He just, they didn't know if he's even going to fucking do it. And that was like one of his first feature films.
That was his first.
Yeah. Film. And they didn't know if he's going to show up. And then they just started fucking filming, hoping he'd show up, which happens many times in his career.
That does. That happened on Lost in Translation.
Yeah. He walked on the fucking set in his street clothes and they're like, fuck it. That's fine. He can wear that. Just go.
Yeah.
And they just fucking start filming it. Yeah. And then the rest is history.
Yeah. So, and some little things about him that I uncovered that I thought were worth bringing up at the top, because I don't really know where to fit him into the timeline. First off, which is really completely unheard of, he doesn't have an agent or a PR manager. He has a 1-800 number, which is hard to get. And every so often he listens to the voicemails on the 1-800. Yeah. He doesn't answer it.
Sounds like something Shia LaBeouf would do.
He'll listen to the voicemails. And if something in there is appealing as a project, he'll reply and do something. Even Sofia Coppola, who directed Lost in Translation.
Hundreds of messages
over a year to him to come and do the movie.
Whose dad is Francis Ford Coppola.
Yeah. She got no response back. Flew to Tokyo with Scarlett Johansson, started filming the movie, hoping he might show up.
Do pre-production, film everything you can without him, and he's going to show up. He'll show up.
And he showed up.
And he fucking showed up.
Yeah.
And it's the favorite movie he ever started in, actually. Yeah.
So no manager agent, just a 1-800 number. I might agree with this. In his opinion, he thinks the movie Kung Fu Hustle is, quote, the supreme achievement of the modern age in terms of comedy.
Yeah.
He's really funny, man.
I mean, when it comes to like physical timing and comedy, you can't be
Kung Fu Hustle is good.
Like it's a very.
Is Kung Fu Hustle the one with the two like chicks that play the guitar notes towards you and shit? That was a good.
This dude.
It has the lion's roar.
Yeah.
The fucking chick. The old dude. Yeah.
I mean, I've laughed hard. I mean, I think movies are funnier, but if you look at the definition of like physical slapstick comedy, doesn't get better than
that's the axe gang one. Seen so much kung fu now. That's just I actually messaged Showbox or someone to say you guys have to have a fucking like kung fu or at least a martial arts genre.
Right.
Yeah. Like, you can't search by
different,
that.
Yeah.
Yeah. You have to type kung fu, but it doesn't match titles necessarily, and then get suggestions. Yeah. I just want a whole category. How are you gonna have westerns and not have fucking kung fu? Like what the fuck?
And the other thing is, he actually bowled the three strikes in a row at the end of Kingpin.
Oh shit. I did not read that.
He actually did that. And the crowd reaction was genuine because they were like, holy fucking shit. He just got two. Holy fucking shit.
You know what though? Like he was probably so in fucking character. You know what I mean? Like he's got the fucking rose and the ball.
But come on.
Fucking-
he grew up outside of Chicago, went to college in Chicago. Like he's a Chicago, like growing up in Michigan, you bowled.
Yeah.
Like he probably was an avid
bowler.
But
it's not impossible for anybody to get three strikes.
You're pretty good at bowling. Yeah.
Yeah. I'm okay. Yeah, like, I mean, I'm not great.
You have shoes and a bag and a ball.
Yeah.
Right,
couple balls. Yeah.
It's like it's one of those epic moments in cinema history. In Escape from LA, there's a scene where Snake Plissken has to run back and forth at the LA Coliseum making baskets. And if he misses a basket, he'll get killed.
Right.
And at the very end, when there's 1 second left on the clock, he's at the complete opposite end of the field and he lobs a shot with 1 second left on the clock and actually sinks it.
Oh, wow.
And the crowd fucking loses it. And everybody thinks it's CGI, but it was like that motherfucker actually made the shot. And
they're in it. You see the crowd, and
he didn't break character once he sank the shot, you know, the whole thing.
That would be the hard part.
Yeah. That would
not lose shit.
He's like, what the fuck?
Yeah.
Like,
but he was Snake the whole way. So, and again, he doesn't need money. So the weird shit that he does now, he's worth $140 million dollars. He doesn't need the money at all.
A lot of the stories are about him pulling a softball, soggy, sweaty wad of money
and giving it to people.
And being like, here you go. Like, go buy pizza, go buy beer. Yeah.
And we'll get there to these stories, but the Bill Murray stories are pretty epic about things that he does outside of movies these days. So his childhood, He was born in Evanston, Illinois, and his mom was a mailroom clerk. His dad was a lumber salesman. He was raised in Willamette, Illinois, which is a suburb of Chicago, and he was the fifth of nine kids. So yeah. The Murray family was a large family.
Dad had the Beaties.
Yeah. And two of his brothers ended up going into acting. Brian Doyle Murray is probably the most famous.
That's Noah's Arcade, right? That's the older one.
I don't know what Noah's Arcade.
Noah's Arcade, Wayne's World. He's fucking the owner of Noah's Arcade. The owner and proprietor.
He's the boss in Christmas Vacation.
Yeah.
He plays somebody. He plays somebody in SpongeBob.
Voice actor.
Yeah. He's in all kinds of shit. Like, you'll recognize him. He's in
Caddyshack.
Like, if you look, he is. He's the caddy manager.
Young as fuck.
Right?
God, everyone's so young in that movie. Yeah.
But,
he's been in all kinds of stuff.
Pretty much anything from that whole Second City. Early, like, Not Ready for Primetime Players, Saturday Night
Second
Live
City
crowd.
Cast is crazy.
Like,
it's
any
everyone.
Of those movies that any of them are in, Brian Doyle Murray is in one of those fucking.
He was in Scrooged.
Yep, he was the boss in Scrooged, I think, wasn't he?
Isn't Scrooge the boss in Scrooged? Yeah.
No.
I think he was
Earl
his
Cross.
Boss.
Earl Cross? I don't know the character.
But anyway, he's in a ton of shit. Right. And he's got another brother who's in a lot of stuff as well.
He was in a movie called Bakersfield PD.
That was a TV show.
Was it a TV show?
Yeah, he was Sergeant Bill.
Very
Hampton.
Iconic voice. Oh, you can hear his whiny voice. Yeah, whiny, and there's a couple scenes from like Meatballs or Caddyshack where Bill Murray gets overexcitable, and you can hear the similarities between their voices. There, yeah.
He's got
legs,
and he knows how to use them. Mm-hmm. But John Murray, Joel Murray, and Brian Doyle Murray are also actors. You'd recognize John and Joel. You've seen them in some comedies and shit, but they're not like brand name. And his sister Nancy is an Adrian Dominican nun who lives in Michigan, and she traveled the United States
doing a one-man show
portraying Saint Catherine of Siena. So that's an odd,
strange
coupling. But their father died in 1967 at the age of 46 from diabetes. When Bill was only 17.
It affected his religion really hard because he was like, why would God take away the father of nine children? Like, what kind of God does that? You know? And then his mom had to work three jobs,
right?
Three fucking jobs. Yeah. That's some Jamaican craziness. Yeah.
Somebody told her, you got one job, lady. And she's like, actually I have three
and nine children.
Yeah. Fuck.
And my pussy's wore
out. He only made 14 grand a year or something. I don't know how much it was at the time. That might've been fair. Actually. I don't know.
I mean, that might've been normal.
Yeah, that was probably normal back then.
Probably minimum wage.
Their dad was really funny, actually, before he died. They said his humor was super dry.
Oh, really?
And that he rarely spoke, but when he would, it was like just a couple line
sniper,
pun.
Yeah.
Pun, boom, everyone's laughing, yeah.
So one of his sisters had polio. His mother had several miscarriages, or there would have been like 14 Murrays instead of nine.
That's a lot of bikes.
Yeah. He went to college as pre-med, dropped out, and... He was a troublemaker during his teenage years. And when he was 20, he got arrested for trying to smuggle 9 pounds of marijuana through Chicago O'Hare Airport.
I read 9 or 10. Yeah. So like he went to Regis as pre-med. Yeah. And then I guess dropped out, changed his mind, and heading home, he was flirting with another passenger and said like, oh, I've got a bomb in my luggage, blah, blah, blah. Like back in the day, that was like terrorist times where it was like, oh, Libyans are going to get us any second. But there was no flight list, 9/11 craziness. Right. So he thought he'd be funny. And then they're like, oh, bomb in your bag, huh? And then they
look
at his bag.
You do have a bomb in the bag.
And he has fucking 10 pounds of weed in there in bricks. But he gets such
a leniency. That was probably out of nervousness. You know what I mean? Like,
maybe.
Guys. Yeah, I'm a killer. She's in my trunk. Guys.
That was his tactic. Why would I say I have something in my bag?
Why would I say I have a bomb in my bag?
It was his What About Bob thing where he says, like, I'm going to have a heart attack.
Yeah.
There's no way you'd have a heart attack because I just predicted it.
Right.
But they go lenient. He gets arrested, but then he gets sentenced to probation. I was like, sentenced to probation?
It's because
10 pounds of it.
Yeah.
Well, they kept ton. It. TSA kept it.
Yeah.
Come on.
True.
Back in the day.
Yeah. That's true.
It was like 1970. Yeah.
So he got off pretty light, though, era, I think. Yeah. Thank God.
He got off pretty lit.
So his brother, Brian Doyle Murray, was in Second City when Bill Murray was 20 and was like, you got to fucking.
And so Brian quit he quit school to come back and work as a street vendor in like Old Town Chicago to try to help support the family because mom had three jobs and there's nine kids. So he comes back, gives up what his would be education for a street vendor career, but it happens to be outside the front of Second City. And he's such a fucking like character and shit. They're like, you need to come in here. And so they bring him inside and he ends up fucking acting and being on stage.
And people who don't know, Second City is like where it's fucking at.
Yeah.
Like if you want to break into comedy.
Did we walk by that?
It's an improv.
There was a place that said improv right there. I saw it.
I went by.
Yeah. Oh, did you? Yeah, I don't remember walking by it. It's fairly nondescript. It's a small theater.
Yeah, it had glass front.
If you want to get into comedy, Second City is where it's at.
Is there an admissions process or something? Like, I mean, there's crazy tuition. Like, there's probably like a thing where they're like, tell me a joke. I don't know
because it's. It'll
make me laugh.
I mean, it's an improv place. So improv places involve teaching improv as well as performing. So you're always doing rehearsals and learning more as you do improv.
If I was a receptionist, I would just fuck with people.
Oh, yeah.
They'd be like, I'm here to apply. And you're like, tap dance, bitch. Just like make them do something weird. Like you're a horse, you're a cow, you're a chicken, you're a pig. Go. Right. Like, and make them do stuff. And they would be like, this is a test. I bet I have to do this shit.
But
they would
like
do whatever the receptionist said.
Almost anyone who you think was awesome, who was on Saturday Night Live, came through Second City.
Yeah, man.
Like, I mean, you just, if you look at, like, if you see any film of Second City and you see pictures on the walls, every
Belushi,
picture is
Chevy
a comedy
Chase,
superstar
Dan
from
Aykroyd,
every era.
Yeah.
Like, not just that era, like every era, like David Cross and Bob Odenkirk. And I mean, just like comedy, like up until now, like that's still where it's at is Second City. So Brian Doyle Murray's there. He convinces Bill to come in. He joins the cast of Second City as well. And in short order, he ends up moving to New York where John Belushi hires him to be on the National Lampoon Radio Hour. And back then, National Lampoon was like another huge comedy vehicle. Yeah. That was a big deal. And then I thought it was weird that he ended up from there. He went on two Saturday Night Lives.
Yeah, there was NBC versus ABC. Two guys are like, that's a great name. I'm going with it. Yeah, and so they ran with it.
Saturday Night Live was a variety show called Saturday Night Live with Howard Cosell. Sounds horrible.
Right.
He was on that show. And then there was also NBC's Saturday Night, which only lasted one season. And then he moves to LA to do some like
he auditioned for
stuff.
The first and didn't make it with Belushi. So the other dude snatches him up on the other network. And yeah, it lasted 5 months.
And then
he goes and auditions again.
Well,
and
Chevy Chase leaves Saturday Night Live.
But he had to audition for Chevy Chase's spot. And then Belushi like puts in, because I guess he didn't do that great at the audition again. Really? He was kind of monotone and just like, whatever. Like, I don't know if he was down on himself because he already did make it once. Yeah.
Maybe nerves.
And then, Belushi steps up for him and says, no, I like the guy. He brought him from National Lampoon. And I think a lot of people jumped ship from National Lampoon and came across.
So, and this is, again, that's the first cast ever of Saturday Night Live. And it was pretty much locked in for years. Like, no, there was no mobility. There was no movement. There were no new cast members. Right now, Saturday Night Live always has like the little half cast member who's in one or two skits every so often.
Otherwise, they're getting sandwiches and coffee when they're not.
They're like, all right, here's your test. We're going to give you
this
little.
We'll give you a couple of episodes.
Here's
if you've got
lines.
Some juice, you'll get more roles. But that wasn't the case. That was just it. They're not ready for primetime players. That was it. John Belushi, Dan Aykroyd, Chevy Chase until he left, Gilda Radner.
And I guess he didn't connect with the audience. I watched a documentary where they were like, he just wasn't fitting in. He didn't necessarily quite get along with everybody. The audience wasn't like accepting him. And he did some kind of crazy thing because it's Saturday Night Live. Like he stopped and talked how to talk with the audience and was like, should they keep me around? Like, I don't feel like I'm connecting with you guys, and had this like heart to heart on a live fucking show, I guess, talking to the audience to say,
wow,
you know, I need you to get behind me. It's what my dead dad would want or something. And he made it like funny. Like he like said, my dad died and he would really want you guys to like me.
And you can see some pictures of his early improv speeches. Like that was what he was really good at, was giving these like impassioned.
Yeah.
It's what he does in Meatballs. It's what he, and it's like, it's off the cuff, like just giving these things. And by the way, Garrett Morris, I can't diss the brother.
Who's Garrett Morris?
He's
the only black guy in the first.
Oh, I saw interviews.
Who's Garrett Morris?
Like he knew.
I just had to give him a shout out. You know,
I didn't, but
I
as soon as he said that, I could guess. And you're a dick.
I like how Brad's the winner somehow. No, I watched interviews with him actually. Yeah. I just didn't know his name. Did you see that? Because where is he now, bro? He's not in Ghostbusters.
He does all kinds of
shit. He wasn't.
He's in that fucking stupid Two Broke Girls sitcom.
I don't know what that is. Stupid. I don't have cable.
It's stupid.
Did you see when Chevy Chase came back for his guest spot?
The Big Bang Theory.
He didn't have cable.
Yeah, I don't have cable. So
you don't need cable to
before.
Watch Big Bang Theory.
No, you don't. And I stream it. And it doesn't have a show before it because I pressed play. I don't see what comes before and after.
What
it,
type of spaceman are you?
What is this technology you have? Are there commercials in your world? Do you not know of Tide?
They have pods. They're tasty. Yeah.
Break me off a piece of the Kit Kat bar.
I don't watch Big Bang Theory, but the Young Sheldon's pretty good.
Yeah. Well, you would like Big Bang Theory if you like Young Sheldon.
I've seen some.
Yeah. You did it in chronological
it's
order.
It's not for me.
It'll work out. No, yeah, now you like it because you did it in the right order.
That's true.
And they've incorporated it.
You're starting with the prequels.
Not really.
Did you see when Chevy Chase comes back though to have his spot on SNL back for like a guest spot?
It's not for me.
Mm-mm. Him and Bill Murray getting a fucking fist fight. Ooh. I guess that
there was a feud.
Yeah, I guess that Bill Murray was kind of fucking crazy, and they were always like, "Man, Harold Ramis came over and was like, "Hey, are you having some trouble with some other people? I hear you're not getting along." He's like, "Yeah, no." He's like, do you care? He's like, no. He's like, all right, good talk. And just like fucking gave up. He's like, fuck, there's no talking.
And Harold Ramis was a writer on Saturday Night Live, and he ended up being a director of Ghostbusters and tons of like big comedies.
And then Dan Aykroyd said that the same thing, that Bill Murray had these crazy mood swings, and he called them hurricanes because you just didn't know when it was fucking coming. You didn't know how well it was going to go.
Right.
And so
there was no alarm.
At one point, they said they were doing a performance, and it's a live audience, and there's this fucking heckler guy that wouldn't show up. So Bill Murray walked to the front stage. He's like, hey, everyone, I'm sure you've noticed that this man's been heckling us through the entire show, and it's not going to continue. And he stage dove and fucking fought the heckler in the fucking audience. Yeah. So that's to set the stage to let you know, like, he doesn't give a fuck. Like, he's crazy like that.
And keep in mind, I don't know that there's enough material research wise to do it as a topic, but those early years of Saturday Night Live were fucking epic. They were coke fueled.
There was no rules.
Like, John Belushi was just high all the fucking time on everything. Heroin, they were fighting. Yeah.
I think what happened.
Lorne Michaels didn't give a fuck. Like, I mean, it was.
He
like
called
those
their crew like the not ready for prime time or something.
Yeah, they were the not ready because they were so fucking crass and out of control. Like, no one else could have wrangled them in. Like, so, they had to do skits because they couldn't
say
commit to a longer
like
piece.
We're like the future early. Saturday Night Live crew.
Yeah.
That's what we are.
So I guess the crew of SNL had like some, like, they were still a little upset about the fact that Chevy Chase left because I think he left for a movie or some shit. Mm-hmm. And so Bill Murray was like, he said he was the spokesperson because he filled in his spot. And I guess Chevy Chase was insisting on doing the nightly news or something, like kicking someone out of their spot to take his old spot over for the guest spot. And so they started talking shit to each other. And Chevy Chase told Bill Murray, this is why I was fucking with you earlier because you keep talking shit. But it was Chevy Chase said that Bill Murray's face looked like something Neil Armstrong would try to land on. And so, Bill Murray said,
comedians bagging.
Yeah. So Bill Murray tells Chevy Chase, you should probably go have sex with your wife. She looks like she needs it. And like, they fucking went back and forth, and then it got crazy to the point that they fist fought backstage, and Dan Aykroyd and Belushi had to pull them apart, which is like the most epic scene ever. Like, Chevy Chase and Bill Murray are actually fucking talking
fighting.
Shit and really fist fighting, like punching each other. And Belushi and Aykroyd are pulling them apart. That's fucking so
It's like
fantastic.
If Bob Barker and Adam Sandler were actually fighting. Yeah. Like that's that'd be great.
And Jane Curtin.
Yeah, old melty face. I wonder who won.
Quit picking people I don't know who they are.
She was the other female cast.
Jane Curtin.
So
she had meat curtains.
Yeah. I knew that was coming.
You said it.
He ends up getting into film.
Were they fireproof, though?
I don't know. It was the 70s. It was a different time.
Yeah.
He ends up getting in the Meatballs in 1979. And I need to rewatch Meatballs. I remember not liking it when I was older. I remember watching
summer camp
it and just
counselor.
Being like,
at the time, comedy's changed, though.
It's goofy.
If you go
comedy's changed.
If you go watch old like Steve Martin shit, you're like, I know this was funny. I love Steve Martin.
Yeah.
But this is like, you're not going to.
But I even
so
remember
much.
In an era when that was still funny, I didn't think it was still funny.
Right.
I didn't care for Meatballs.
What's the popular Steve Martin, the old school one where he thinks he's
the
black?
Jerk.
It is jerk. Yeah. The jerk. Yeah. It's not.
I haven't seen it. Last time I saw it, it was fucking funny.
I could see how it would be funny or it could be funny, but to me, it's not.
To me,
all that
when
funny.
I watch old comedies, it's like, it's to me, it's not necessarily to watch it to laugh out loud. I'm watching it to, it's like to study humor.
Yeah.
Right.
Like, cause I watch The Jerk and there's a lot of shit in there that's so funny. Yeah.
I bought his
but
book.
I'm not going to laugh out loud at it, but yeah. I watch it and I'm like, okay, that was a well-crafted scene. His timing, this, that, like this was perfect. That was really funny.
Yeah.
You know, and you can just
very
study
topical.
The,
it's of the time, like, you know, fucking Dana Carvey. He does all these impressions, but of people that you're like, oh, that was hot right then. That right. was the president. That right. was this person. That was that celebrity that yeah. was hot then.
Yeah.
So it really mattered then, but they didn't necessarily transition. So if you see him go on a fucking talk show, you watch them set it up. It's so obvious. They're like, right. So George Bush, church lady, like they start throwing shit out and you're like.
But the thing is about Dana Carvey, like you watch it, like if he gets on Fallon or something who doesn't throw him those softballs, mm-hmm. he'll set up like modern day shit and yeah. Carvey just nails it because he's a master
right.
impersonator. It's just everybody wants the old shit.
Yeah, yeah.
You know? Yeah, they want him to be who
yeah.
he was.
Yeah, they want the church lady.
Yeah.
But he follows this up in a movie that I haven't seen and probably won't. Called Where the Buffalo Roam from 1980, where he plays Hunter S. Thompson.
Mm-hmm.
And I so don't like Hunter S. Thompson and his whole head trip.
I know. I wish I had more time. I was trying to watch some more things that were out of the norm. You know, I've seen all the fucking normal comedies from but Bill Murray.
Did you hear the backstage story of mm-hmm. when he was filming it? So apparently he hung out with Hunter S. Thompson quite a lot while he was filming it so he could like get the role down
oh,
and
wow.
get to know Hunter
Wasn't
S.
Johnny
Thompson
Depp?
Better. And apparently yeah. they were always fucking with each other and trying to do more gonzo shit than the other one. So picture
yeah.
Bill Murray and Hunter S. Thompson trying to outdo each other.
Yeah.
And eventually it escalated at one point at the hotel. They started one-upping each other about trying to see who could be the most Houdini-like and escape from crazy shit. So eventually, and they were probably both fucking drunk and high, Hunter S. Thompson ties
well,
Bill
you know
Murray
Hunter
to
S. Thompson
a,
yeah, was
ties Bill Murray up with a rope to a chair and kicks it into a swimming pool.
Fuck.
And
that's
it
funny.
Sinks to the bottom of the swimming pool. Obviously, Bill Murray cannot get out.
Yeah.
And Hunter S. Thompson has to dive in and drag the chair.
Looks like I won.
Exactly. So in an alternate reality, they did his first and only movie was Meatballs.
I thought the dinosaurs were going to save you. But
he was that guy on Saturday Night Live for two seasons who died in a pool.
Think how scary that is, though. But it's like so worth the little story. It's like, one time Hunter S. Thompson kicked me into a pool tied up because we were trying to out Houdini
right.
each other.
Yeah.
And now it's worth
well,
a giggle. The time you could have died to get the giggle now.
Well, that's something my wife had just said. She was talking about a trip they made to the Rubicon, which is like off-roading trail.
Right.
And like they had no food. Like guys planned the trip. They didn't have like they were stuck there for a week and it was like a horrible trip.
Right.
But now it like created like really good memories.
Oh, yeah.
Like when you think back about it. And I was like, well, that's kind of how it is. If everything goes as planned, it's not
there's
a
no
memorable memory.
Right. But
you know,
when
we go
shit,
camping and we show up and there's a trailer or there's a wheel missing off our trailer.
Right.
And like, you don't know where the fucking wheel is. And we went and hunted it down. You know, you have,
if you
oh,
live
that's
to
a,
tell the tale.
Yeah. If you live to tell the tale, you're like, oh shit, bad things could have happened, but they didn't.
Right.
No, when I reminisce about backpacking across fucking Europe and my feet fucking bled, I had blisters the size of my fist on the bottom of my fucking ball of my foot.
And it was
my
horrible
socks
at the
were
time.
Stuck to it. Sleeping in fucking like train stations on the side of mountains in the fucking rain.
You were
starving.
Homeless.
Almost ate out of the trash can, totally homeless, lost 30 pounds, had a rope holding my pants up, like fucking scraggly and
dying.
Had a
Canada Maple shirt on, Maple Leaf shirt.
I should have had a Canadian Maple Leaf shirt on because it would have helped me.
Yeah, the US
but
one.
Now I tell the story and I'm like, oh, it's fucking crazy. It's a cool story, you know? But when that was happening, I was fucking homeless.
Your brother hiking up the, you know, fucking Mount Whitney or something where he's
fucked.
Like almost dying.
Yeah.
Toes falling off. He only has three toes now.
Thank you, Adam Pedroza, for saving me. Yeah.
So Bill Murray in the early 80s just like launches his career in a major way.
Because SNL, they make some instant stars. Fucking stars.
Yeah. Not anymore.
Well, not anymore, but it does. It is a star
then,
maker.
At that time. Yeah.
I mean, but, you're
but
not,
it's
you're
not as
guaranteed.
Crazy as it was. Like now, if you watch SNL, you're like,
because at the time TV was super conservative, you know what I mean? It was just like someone described it as the television was considered a guest in your house and it shouldn't do anything or perform anything that a guest wouldn't do when they were a guest of your home.
Like don't shit on my couch.
They were really pushing the line of that to jump outside of the, they were all on coke and shit fucking going crazy, you know?
But I mean, even today, like you still, every cast gets two breakouts.
Yeah, there's
like every SNL cast gets two people that go on to make
Keenan
comedy
Peele
movies.
On SNL?
No.
They weren't.
No.
Yeah.
One of, they might have written for SNL. A lot of
I know Andy Sandberg, who kind of, he's
sort of faded
kind
away.
Of bigger.
Though.
Yeah,
did
he kind of faded away.
Well, he did.
Yeah, he was on
SNL.
He
did that TV show.
He's
for
funny.
Years.
Yeah.
We didn't stay around.
Brooklyn.
You know, I
don't think we're doing a podcast on him in 20
no, I
years.
Think
maybe
no.
though. Maybe he's on his 4-year hiatus.
Exactly.
Yeah, you know who broke out who was already famous, but they broke out from SNL with comedy was fucking Justin Timberlake.
Yeah.
Like that motherfucker that is fucking funny, dude.
He's
like,
funny as shit.
Yeah. I don't know. Like, I almost feel like he could do stand up or he could do fucking like
for sure.
Him and Fallon are
funny
best
motherfucker.
Friends.
Yeah.
Those camp skits and all that
which
shit.
Which it's impressive. You know what I mean? Yeah. Like who the fuck is Backstreet Boy motherfucker?
Yeah,
fucking 98 Degrees, whatever the fuck he was in.
Yeah,
you know,
no one
like,
knows the other guys.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. They're fucking all just whatever. And this motherfucker is, he's a comedian.
Right.
Practically.
But he's the guy.
It was insane.
He's the fucking guy. Like he's the one who kept doing it because he was the guy.
Come out of a boy band, a funny ass,
become
cool,
an actor,
popular guy, and an actor,
and make good movies. Yeah. He's a good actor, and then also be funny. Like, it's pretty impressive. Like, I don't know, I might be in love, but
I wouldn't blame you.
He quits playing games with my heart.
Deserved.
Oh, he hit me with a coughing fit. So he does Caddyshack, Stripes, and Tootsie.
Hit me.
I love Stripes.
I love Stripes when I was a kid. Stripes was awesome. I loved Caddyshack when I was a kid. I love Caddyshack right now. Caddyshack to this day is still one of the funniest movies ever made.
I wonder if that's a generational thing.
Rodney Dangerfield in Caddyshack. Fucking classic. Chevy Chase and Caddyshack, classic. Bill Murray.
So they made friends again, obviously. And that was part of it, having to work together in Caddyshack.
Right.
Dude, Harold Ramis said that they wrote that spot for the caddy was a non-speaking role. And he was like, fuck, it's Bill. Like, let him talk. And he went up to him. He's like, hey, man, have you ever thought about, because he used to be a caddy. Him and his brothers grew up. Yep. They paid for part of their education by working as golf caddies. Yep. And he said, did you ever imagine yourself that you were the announcer of the golf? So you'd be like, as he steps up to the hole. And he's like, say no more, say nothing. I know exactly what you want. And he said, that's the discussion. Have you ever thought about you were an announcer?
Right.
And
it's because he did.
Yeah, he's like say no more. And that character wasn't even a character. He did it right then and there.
Right then and there.
That was it. That was it. He did
and
it. The rest of the movie.
And the entire, all of his lines are improv.
I wish I could do that. I can't do that. I'll practice.
In that movie. And then also, which I thought was kind of cool, in the same exact
he overcame
era,
the improvable. We're gonna say.
Oh, I like it.
Fantastic.
It's fucking man, you're on great. Fire tonight. Dude.
You are. That's fucking
thank
great.
Trying to spark this creativity. You
it's
know
working.
What I mean?
It's, whatever you're doing, it's working.
It is.
Keep it might be that Steve Jobs shirt that you're wearing.
It might be.
Yeah. Like a half a glass of whiskey. Yeah. Maybe that's what it is.
You need to do our annual.
Steve, you fucking mentioned the Steve Jobs shirt one more time.
You need to do our.
Brad's gonna fight me.
Do our annual Sofa King keynote.
Yeah.
We said keynote together.
Exactly.
Son of a bitch.
So he ends up being the first ever guest on Late Night with David Letterman in 1982. Which is actually pretty awesome because when he switches over to the Late Show with David Letterman in 1993, Bill Murray is the first guest. When he does, when he switches the show to CBS, Bill Murray is his first guest. And at the very end of David Letterman's entire run, Bill Murray was his last guest. So Bill Murray like completely bookended Letterman. And if you search,
and
if
I
you
think
search
Foo
for
Foo Fighters was the last band, like Dave Letterman was loyal to
he
what
was,
he liked. Yeah.
But if you search for Bill Murray, David Letterman sessions, they're fucking gold. He does some crazy shit on Letterman over the years. And it's pretty fucking good. but so as his popularity is there and he's finally got the clout to make something, he makes the movie The Razor's Edge, which is an adaptation of a novel.
So you know what's behind that, though, right? Like, no one wanted to make that movie.
Yeah, no one wants to make
it. He leveraged Ghostbusters. Yeah. They wanted it. So Belushi dies. He ODs. Mm-hmm. And it has a profound effect on Bill Murray. But in a bold move, which I hope we all do to each other if one of us passes, he gives the eulogy at Belushi's funeral, and it's all shit talk. He points out
he roasts him.
He roasts him and points out his poorest qualities with a straight face. No laughing, though.
Yeah.
Gives a negative eulogy and then says, you will not be missed, and walks away.
Yeah, but it's kind of like that's something.
The ultimate punchline.
Yeah.
Because you can't fucking fight back. You're fucked. Like, you can't do shit.
And it's like, as a comedian to another comedian, like, that's kind of like.
And it wouldn't
that's
have worked without
want.
That closing line.
Yeah.
It's like
that you will not be missed is the punchline as he walks
it's,
off.
It's like Dave, when we
it's like Dave eating his brother's ashes and other people's who he does not know.
Yeah.
Your dad, your brother got you.
Yeah.
Right. Yes.
And when you're in the wrestling singlet and we make you have fucking like movable arms and we put you in poses and shit.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, when I'm
so
tribute.
So yeah, he does Ghostbusters basically as a deal with the studio. I'll do Ghostbusters
if you produce this $12 million production.
If you produce this movie,
because at this point he's fed up with the comedy and he wants to show he wants to do something serious. So he co-writes based off of that book or something, mm-hmm. Razor's Edge, mm-hmm. but it doesn't do well. And he uses Belushi's eulogy in some moving part in the movie. He reads the eulogy that he delivered as a part of the movie.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
Man, that shit is good.
It is good.
The Wyoming
Burnside.
Yeah. Oh, the Burnside.
Yeah. No, that's just good.
But so Ghostbusters ends up being his biggest movie up to date. It's the highest grossing film of 19. And I remember it in 1984. I remember
it was huge.
Fucking
everything
massive,
was
dude. I saw that so many times at the movie theater. It was fucking dope. And it, again, to this day, still fucking funny.
We had a VHS tape, and I just watched that shit. Oh, Red Ghostbusters, Ferris Bueller, Goonies, and Rad Racing, and I watched the fuck out of that.
Rad was, that was a good movie.
And I don't know if this is still accurate, but one of the articles that I read said that Ghostbusting is still the highest grossing comedy of all time.
Wow, that's impressive.
It might be. I mean,
it's got time on them too, though.
Yeah, well, and that movie, like, because of we watched it when we were young, you're gonna have your kid watch it.
Yeah. Sure.
You know what I mean? Sure. So like that's like Ghostbusters is going to keep being a thing regardless. Right. You know what I mean? It's like Ninja Turtles.
And he did say I read an interview with him where they asked him, I think it was actually a Letterman interview and I read a transcript, and he asked if he would ever do Ghostbusters 3. I think it was on his last Letterman interview. And he said, I would love to do Ghostbusters 3 if they kill my character in the first scene of the film.
At one point
that's a no, basically. He'll get paid for it and not have to do
it. At one point he said he would entertain it and he was kind of like into it.
Yeah.
But he had also had a falling out with Harold Ramis over Groundhog's Day. Like they ended up co-producing that or directing
it. Which was a garbage movie.
I love that movie.
So good.
What do you not like about that?
It was a horrible movie. It's boring.
It's deeper than you think, man.
Don't care how deep it is. 12 feet deep. It's the abyss.
It's
garbage.
Good.
People like it.
That was his opportunity to finally express what he tried to express in Razor's Edge, because he was trying to be this like enlightenment journey of his spirit in that. And so they filmed that before Ghostbusters. Then he filmed Ghostbusters. Then they released Razor's Edge and it fucking flopped. And like people hated on it. They're like, you can't do that. You have to do comedy, which pushes him into most speculate that that's why he goes on his
a 4-year hiatus.
Fucking terror. Yeah.
He just stops and he studies philosophy and history at the Sorbonne.
Yeah.
I mean, he goes out and improves himself.
You know what though?
Years.
Like, think about it. If you're like, well, that's not what the people want right now. Let's just give it time.
Right.
I don't need the money.
Right. I don't need it. Yeah.
Give it time.
But still, that's a move of someone who doesn't give a fuck about their Hollywood career.
But he's educated,
because
though,
that's
too, he knows.
When you're, I mean, he's at the fucking top of his game. Ghostbusters just came out. Highest grossing film of the year. Highest grossing comedy of all time. His next movie was a flop. He could still get movies made. He would still fucking clock huge dollars. I'm sure studios were clamoring to fucking get him in. And he was like, nope, peace. Like, fuck. Yeah. Like, well, that's not what someone who cares about their career does.
It's like that in Hollywood, though. Like, it's not necessarily the actor. It's the role they choose.
Right.
They could be a great actor and they choose a shitty role. That's it for him. You know what I mean?
Like, Bill Murray said that. He said, I just picked good ones.
Yeah.
He didn't take the credit for himself. He's like, I just picked good movies. Yeah. And I picked the ones I liked. Jamie Foxx had some shit about that where he's like, he was remembered for In Living Color.
Yeah.
And enough time passed that now he can be a musician and an actor without people remembering that fucking crazy character. What the fuck was it? Where he's like half cross-eyed with his lips puggered and shit.
Yeah. Which was a funny.
It was funny. But people would be like, you can't be serious and be singing that shit, because they would just see him cross-eyed with his lips puckered.
What was the movie where he played the musician where he's like out on the street fucking Robert Downey Jr.
Yeah.
Fucking like that. He was playing a serious character, you know.
He's my man crush in Django, though. That's fucking. He's a badass.
Django's a fucking awesome. I've seen.
But
Django.
Again,
I've seen Django, I think, almost more than I've seen a lot of movies.
Really?
Yeah. Because I don't watch movies. I usually don't watch movies twice.
Right.
If I watch them more than once, Happy Gilmore, I can't count how many times I've seen it. Snatch, can't count how many times I've seen it.
Right.
Django. Yeah. I've seen it at least
Lock,
five
Stock,
times.
Boondock Saints, Snatch.
I think Jamie Foxx learned from Eddie Murphy's mistake, which was
Transvestite Hooker.
No, that wasn't. There was no mistake involved.
Oh yeah.
The mistake was he tried to release an R&B album in the midst of the height of his comedy.
Right.
And he's actually an amazing singer.
Yeah.
Eddie Murphy is an amazing singer. Yeah.
Topic.
Topic. Yep. But it didn't work because he was still a comedian. So
Nobody would take him seriously.
Exactly.
It's like if Weird Al tried to do a normal album.
He could probably do something for sure.
Awesome. How cool would that be if Weird Al just jumped in like Dwight Yoakam did that shit, Sling Blade? You know what I mean? If all of a sudden Weird Al just like
Panic Room, he was in Panic Room too.
I haven't seen Panic Room. Oh wait, it's Panic Room.
Good.
Oh,
Jodie Foster.
Yeah, I've seen that. Yeah.
So he does more films. He gets back into it. He does Scrooged and Ghostbusters 2. And he does Groundhog Day in 93. He does What About Bob in 91.
Him and Richard Dreyfuss did not get along.
My friend Andy, who has sent us whiskey, he came down here, et cetera. He worked on What About Bob.
Oh, wow.
And
he's the Suntory man, huh?
Apparently. Yeah. Yeah. Maybe that's why he gave us Suntory, because he worked with Bill Murray. And Bill Murray pitches Suntory in Lost in Translation.
Oh, it doesn't.
There's a bunch
maybe.
Of
I barely remember that.
That would be kind of funny. Like we're barely connecting the dots right now.
Exactly. But I remember Andy was on the set filming What About Bob, and he kept like calling us because I don't know what got Bill Murray into doing the script, but apparently once they got on the set, Bill Murray realized this is dog shit.
Right.
Like this movie sucks.
I like that movie.
What About
Bob? But the thing is, I forget what the price was.
I'm a sailor. I sail now.
He ended up showing up on set on the first day and he told the cast, this movie sucks. This script is awful. Any of you who give me a joke that is good enough to be in the movie will get $500.
Oh, nice.
So and the entire movie,
them to get better.
The entire movie was constantly
so he
script
funded
doctored,
it, basically.
Was constantly changed. Like Bill Murray just was an uphill struggle to turn that movie into not being a piece of shit. And Andy talked so much shit about how bad this movie, he was like this, and he was just getting started in Hollywood himself. He was a boom mic operator. And he was like, this is the worst movie I've ever been on. This is fucking horrible.
So,
he was like, when this thing comes out, it is going to flop. It is going to ruin careers. And then by the end of the filming, he was like, no, I think this might do okay.
And
the
magic of editing.
I think Bill Murray might have saved it. And like Bill Murray's hustle to make this movie not suck made it the movie that it is.
Well, and that's the other thing too. You think about it. You took the role.
Right.
You know what I mean? You took the role. It was a bad decision.
How do we make it right? A lot of times, it seems like you'd read the whole script and be like, no, I'm not going to take the role. But a lot of times if it's a really hot shit director.
Yeah. Or Richard Dreyfuss.
You'd be like, fuck it, that's the other thing.
Right. Like you're looking at it, but you might not really figure it out until you see like what's actually happening. Like you're in the midst of it and you're like, this is not what I thought it was going to be.
Or you sign up with a particular script and then 6 months later, a year later, when you sit down to film, they hand you a completely revised script and you're like, this is not the fucking script I signed off on.
Did you see what he did to the producer?
Yeah, fuck.
So he got in a fight. A female producer, her name was Laura Ziskin. He got in several fights with her. Yeah, what about Bob? Yeah. He threatened to throw her across the parking lot and then crushed her sunglasses and threw them across the parking lot. And then eventually it came to a head at one point and he threw her into a lake.
This motherfucker's like the Andre Agassi of acting.
Yeah, he is.
But someone said, he said a friend at some time asked, hey, you kind of have a reputation. He's like, yeah, what's that? He's like, that you're hard to work with. He's like, yeah, well, that reputation comes with people I didn't like working with.
Right. Yeah.
Yeah. And he said, like, you know, Wes Craven, Sophia. Yeah. He's like,
Wes Anderson.
Yeah.
With Wes Craven.
Oh, sorry. Yeah. He said, those are people that know
like,
how to treat
people.
That'd
be dope. What's going on here?
Billy Krueger.
Was he in the Wishmaster 5? Like, Billy Krueger.
I'm glad you went straight for the Wishmaster.
Yeah. Those are some of my favorites, man. Yeah. Like,
Wishmaster 5.
You went for the B sides.
Dude, Wishmaster is dope, man.
So
people are sleeping on
but
that.
Yeah, if you chuck the fucking producer in the lake, you kind of feel like you might be over and they're going to start back. Like they're going to pull Back to the Future on you
The other thing,
Martin
though,
McFly,
too, like is like you throw this fucking producer in the lake and then everybody else out there is like, yeah, they were garbage.
Yeah.
They sucked.
So his career takes a turn in 98 where he starts to get away from comedy and get into the movies that I think he wanted to make in the first place. And he does Rushmore with Wes Anderson. I don't think it was Wes Anderson's first movie. It might have been his second. Was Bottle Rocket his movie?
Oh, yeah, Bottle Rocket.
I think that
Owen
was
Wilson.
His first movie. Luke Wilson.
Yeah.
But he does Idiocracy. Rushmore, and he wins Best Supporting Actor from the New York Film Critics Circle, the National Society of Film Critics, Los Angeles Film Critics Association. So the movie, good movie. He does a great job in it. He's actually got one of my favorite super subtle comedy moments in any film I can think of, and most people might not be impressed with it. There's a scene where he's in the elevator with the kid, and he's got...
From what movie?
From Rushmore.
Oh, I don't
and he think has,
so long.
He has a like a airplane bottle, an airplane-sized bottle of whiskey
mm-hmm.
and a Coke, and he opens the can of Coke, takes a big swig of it, sticks it in his jacket pocket, pours the whiskey into the can of Coke, switches it around and drinks it, like all while this dialogue is happening. And it's just total nothing in the scene and something about it. I was like, that
was no spoken word.
No, it was, they were talking, but it has nothing. Okay. It was just like, you could tell he just did that.
Yeah.
Like, it was just like, you're fucking fantastic. Like, that was so good to do. But I loved Rushmore.
Yeah. I don't think I've seen that movie. I'm looking at the cover.
It's my funny hat, like go-kart or something.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, but then in 2003, he does Lost in Translation, wins a ton of stuff. I remember, again, pure Bill Murray.
He plays himself like stuck in Japan or something. Is that what that one is?
He's not, he doesn't play himself, but he plays an actor very much like himself. Okay. And he's in Japan. He's like a huge actor in the States and he's in Japan doing ads for Suntory Whiskey, which is a big thing. Like you can be a huge actor. Like you can be Robert fucking De Niro in the United States and never do a commercial.
Yeah.
But in Japan, you have to do commercials.
Robert Downey De Niro.
Yeah,
that's exactly. A mix.
Yeah, Robert Down Syndrome De Niro.
But at the end of Lost in Translation, there's like, I can't remember if he whispers the secret.
That guy's a retarded good actor. He's a retarded good actor.
Yeah. Yeah. Retarded good.
I think he whispers a secret into Scarlett Johansson's ear.
You're never going to believe this.
At the end.
No one's going to believe you.
At the end of Lost in Translation. And no one knows, like no one has ever said what the secret is. Like the two of them have never said what it was to even the director.
You were great last night.
Yeah.
Like nobody. And like Bill Murray told a story on Letterman and he said that he was on a boat going across.
I'm on a boat.
He was on a ferry going across the river going in New York. And there was another ferry docked right next to him. And he was sitting there drinking a cup of coffee and the woman like, you know, 20 feet away on the other ferry was like, oh, it's Bill Murray. And she was like, I loved you in Lost in Translation, like blah, blah, blah. And it had been like several years since Lost in Translation was out.
What about Ghostbusters?
And she was all, you know, you have to tell me like, what did you whisper? Like, what was the secret at the end of Lost in Translation? And he said, I realize I'm sitting and he was like, this is before cell phones. Like no one was going to record it. Yeah. I could actually tell her what the secret was. No one else is really going to
go viral.
It's not going to go viral. This woman will know. I'll finally share it with a third person other than Scarlett Johansson. And he said, so I stood up and walked over to the banister and I screamed the secret to her. And as soon as I screamed the secret, the ferry honked its horn.
That's
completely drowned out what I said. And I just shrugged at her and sat back down. And I've never told the secret to anyone else again. I was like, that's fucking magical.
Yeah, he tried to get it to the universe. Like,
the universe was like, nope. Yeah. That shit stays on lockdown.
Surprise. I want to fuck you.
But
that's how it was.
I guess they didn't get along. I guess the scene where they're laying on the bed had to be done multiple times and they finally took a 1 day break and came back to it because they were.
Oh, so it's probably something mean to her then. Yeah. It's probably something
maybe.
Bitch, you're gonna fail.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So in 2004, he did a movie that he himself has talked shit about, which is the Garfield movie. And I thought this was hysterical.
Scarface Johansson.
What?
It's the Scarface. Yeah.
Do you have a Scarface?
No.
You're just mixing shit again?
Yeah, he took
He's talking now.
He only took the role of Garfield because he saw on the script that it was written by Joel Cohen.
Mm-hmm.
And he thought that it was Joel Cohen of the Coen brothers
Fargo
and did, I mean, just endless.
Wrong Joel?
Yeah. It was just some other guy named Joel Cohen,
right.
But he had already signed.
I wonder, you know what we should do? This is the plan. Okay, we change our names.
Okay.
To big names.
Yeah. I'm Brad Pitt.
Okay.
You know what I mean? Or whatever. We can change them to whatever.
I'll be Matt Damon.
You just Matt Damon. Brad Pitt. Yeah. You're fucking Ben Affleck now.
Yeah. Okay.
Congratulations. I'm done with that. Dr. Ben Affleck.
I'm done with that.
Yeah. And then when we just start putting in, be like, this is.
I say you change
to Ben Affleck.
Charlie Murphy.
Yeah. Brad Pitt.
Charlie
Matt
Murphy.
Damon,
I thought he died.
And Ben Affleck are on a podcast.
Yeah. Yeah. Exactly.
This shit's going to blow up.
You're right.
Shit's going
to
blow up.
We need to try that.
I'm telling you.
That's a funny idea, actually.
So he does a ton of indie movies from that point on. Moonrise Kingdom, Grand Budapest Hotel, a ton of.
Can
Wes
you just
Anderson
change your
movies.
Name? You just like fill out an application and pay the fee?
You can. Yes, you can.
What happens to my kids and shit? Like their shit has to change or no?
Nope.
Can I change it back?
Yes.
Yeah.
We should do that just for a fucking experiment.
You can change your name. You go to the marriage license place, the hall of records.
And
you'll get a new social security card and everything. Yeah. It's just like, yeah. It's just like when you get married, you get one free name change.
Right.
So your wife or you can change your name to whatever you want. It doesn't even have to be.
Because
in
most states, you can change your name to whatever. Has to sign off on the name change.
I'm going to change my name to Charmin Ultra.
I like it.
I love it that much. Thank you, Charmin Ultra, for existing.
So he ends up doing Zombieland where he plays himself and he riffs on himself like he's just out hanging out with the zombies and doing his thing. He did the Jim Jarmusch movie Coffee and Cigarettes in 2003 where he plays himself as
hiding in a coffee shop.
Like hiding in a coffee shop serving coffee.
Mm-hmm.
And have you ever seen
that? You don't have a disguise on. You're Bill motherfucking Murray.
You might want to watch that. It's a bunch of like short scenes. It's a bunch of like vignettes with different like big actors.
Yeah.
But he like, I forget who, GZA and somebody else from the Wu-Tang Clan go into a coffee shop to get some coffee and Bill Murray happens to be playing
the
himself.
Barista.
He's the guy. And
he's
it's
the
not
barista?
Like,
or
but it's
like,
not really
not
a barista.
Barista.
No,
like
it's
a
not
pot
that
of coffee,
type of
like,
coffee. It's like a fucking
like Lois,
shitty,
the waitress.
Just bringing coffee in a pot.
Gotcha.
And he's drinking coffee from the pot and it's just him hanging out with the Wu-Tang Clan for this little scene. It's really
funny.
They're
all, you're Bill Ghostbusters motherfucking Murray.
But even one of the stories that we'll get to later starts with the fact that he was only hanging out someplace because he was getting ready to meet, he was getting ready to go see GZA in a concert.
That's at that bar.
Because they all knew each other because they did this movie together. But he stops doing, you know, he still does films, but he has tons of other stuff. He's a massive, avid golfer. He invests in and or owns tons of like
B-league
baseball
teams. They said he's a serious golfer. He's not good, but he's a serious golfer.
So is his brother. But he owns.
There's a lot of people that are serious golfers.
He owns or invests in the St. Paul Saints, the Charleston River Dogs, the Hudson Valley Renegades, the Broxton Rocks, the Utica Blue Sox, the Fort Myers Miracle, the Salt Lake Sting, the Catskill Cougars, the Salt Lake City Trappers. All of these are sex moves, by the way, and sex moves.
Salt Lake City Trappers. Yeah.
they're all. He's like huge into minor league baseball.
That's
like
crazy.
He invests a ton of money in it. He owns a bunch of restaurants. 2016, he gets the Mark Twain Prize for American Humor by the Kennedy Center, which is like the.
Have you seen Will Ferrell's Mark Twain speech?
No.
Oh fuck! It's so good. He talks.
Have you seen Eddie Murphy's Mark Twain speech?
No, I need to go watch.
Shit.
I'm gonna go watch Bill Murray's now.
You watch Eddie Murphy's and you realize, oh, that's why this motherfucker's famous, because his stand-up is as good as it gets.
Will Ferrell breaks the award right away. He drops it on the fucking stage and then picks it up and sets it, and like the face is perfectly still intact, so it's just like crookedly setting on top of the broken body, and then he thanks his ex-wives and shit before he thanks his wife that's sitting there.
Right.
He's like, we're just too young. That's plain and simple.
Long before the truth comes out about Cosby, Eddie Murphy gets on there and his entire set is talking shit about how Cosby rapes people.
Oh, oh no.
And it's fucking
I'm watching
hysterical.
That tonight.
Wow.
And the crowd is begrudgingly laughing.
Unbelievable.
They're like, talking about
Dr. Huxtable?
I don't want to laugh at this, goddamn, that was funny. Like, it's fucking good. But
yeah, that didn't work.
So he wins the Mark Twain Prize. And one of the things before we finally get to his stories is he ends up getting married. He cheats on his wife and he ends up getting married a second time. And one thing that doesn't come
to
up
the
very
woman
often,
to
the woman that he cheats with. But then during the divorce filings, he gets accused of domestic violence, infidelity, an addiction to sex, marijuana, and alcohol.
No one's addicted to sex, marijuana, and alcohol. That's just a normal want and need.
Okay.
Yeah.
But
I mean, you could do it in excess.
Apparently,
but it's not addiction.
No, he hit her more than once. So apparently the Murricane. But so yeah,
he
so
spoke
this,
publicly on that second divorce.
Yeah.
No, just saying that he was
she
like,
asked for
he
it.
Didn't see it coming. Like he said, he thought
she didn't either.
Yeah. Jesus.
There's no warning.
But yeah, so the movie, right. As we're, coming to a close, I highly recommend watching this movie.
Yeah. I just stumbled across that shit.
Well,
like,
with one caveat, the movie's kind of cool. So the idea here is starting maybe 10 years ago, Bill Murray just randomly fucking does shit. Like just with people, just normal everyday shit, and surprises people, hangs out with them all night, does random shit. And these stories circulate on the internet, especially because he was doing it before Facebook blew up and all this stuff, but now the social media is
before
out.
Reddit and all that.
It all makes like a bigger deal. But so this movie is a guy who, A, he's trying to get, he's calling the 800 number, trying to get with Bill Murray. But then B, he's traveling around the world to meet with people who have Bill Murray stories, to look at their footage, to hear what exactly Bill Murray did and put this thing together. It's a really cool documentary. There's really cool stories of him interviewing these Bill Murray people, with the caveat that he should not be the narrator of his own movie.
Oh, it didn't bother me.
It bothered the fuck out of me. He was so obviously...
Yeah, you can't talk yourself, like, talk about yourself in the third person.
Well, no, it's like, just, he was like, reading...
You
he
might
was
ruin that for everyone.
He was reading the script. He was reading his script into a microphone.
Brit's like, it didn't bother me. Kind of now.
And it's obvious that he's just reading a script into a microphone. You he's a so? Good filmmaker. It's edited well. It's directed well. But man, he should have just, he should have had somebody else narrate it. Like it didn't hit for me. But the stories are great. So some of the stories that he talks about is, the first one is a lot of the Murray stories take place in Charleston because he owns a restaurant there and he invests in a little league team there. And there was a wedding photographer who was taking photos on like some like classic old, like, you know, Gothic footsteps and buildings of a couple that was about to get married for their wedding announcement. Mm-hmm. And he said that he sees that the groom is like staring over his shoulder, like freaking out about whatever is behind him.
Yeah. And he said, he's like, normally there's like fucking trolleys going by and people
like horse and carriages.
And
so he turns around getting ready to be all salty and be like, hey, you're interrupting the shot. And he turns around and like standing immediately behind him is Bill Murray. And he gave some words of advice to the couple. And
he was patting and rubbing his stomach.
That's right.
He was like rubbing his belly, like
and rubbing
slapping
his belly. He was rubbing
to
his belly
to try to distract him.
Yeah.
He's trying to. Yeah.
So then they invited him in, and he took some photos with him, and that was one of the first stories. But so some of the stories that they talk about, he ends up crashing a dinner party in Charleston. I'll go through these pretty quickly, but if any of them really stand out, be sure to add to them. He ends up running into a White Sox or a
Cubs fan.
A Cubs fan.
Yeah.
At a massive game, and just gives her a ticket.
Yeah, he walks by. He's like, "What are you doing?" She's like, "Trying to get a ticket." He's like, "Come with me," and just takes the fan into like the best seat possible.
Yeah.
And just sits just him and her.
Because he's Bill motherfucking Murray. They're just like,
well,
"Yeah, come on in."
He probably has. Yeah.
I really like the way that, I mean, this is no spoiler really, but like the way the movie starts out, it's like talking to someone, and they're like, "So I'm sitting in my front room, and my doorbell rings, and I go to the door and answer it, and there's a guy there standing in a hat with five pizzas, and it's Bill motherfucking Murray."
Yeah.
And then it switches to like a girl, and she's like, "So we're at this fucking party, and I go in the kitchen, there's a guy wearing an apron with yellow rubber gloves, wearing a beanie, and he's doing the dishes. He turns around, and it's Bill motherfucking Murray." And then it switches to the next one, he's like, "I'm standing in the urinal, I'm taking a piss, and these hands go over my eyes while I'm pissing, and somebody whispers right in my ear, 'No one's ever gonna believe you,' and I turn around, and it's Bill motherfucking Murray." And so it's like, it just shows little snippets of everybody's fucking story. And then it begins, and it goes, and they interview all those people from those stories.
Yeah.
But it's so fucking funny, because what a funny concept. If you're Bill Murray, like, you could walk in there, cover. If anyone else had done that, they would have been like,
it'd have been
a fucking
fist fight.
Yeah.
Why are you touching me while I'm pissing?
You turn around ready to fucking swing a punch, and it's Bill motherfucking Murray.
Yeah.
Like, what?
It's better if you hit him.
Yeah.
Like, he would probably fight you, you know?
Probably would.
I mean, That'd see Dustin Hoffman farting and pissing with his pants at his ankles inside the Maya Theater. At least the guy looked a lot like Dustin Hoffman. As far as I'm concerned, it was him.
It might have been him.
Yeah. That would be funny. What if it was?
Yeah, probably was.
So,
yes, it was. Dustin motherfucking Hoffman.
So in Austin, Texas, at South by Southwest, the big music and movie festival. He ends up going to a bar called the Shangri-La, which hadn't been open for all that long. And he's going to see the Wu-Tang. Gizza in a concert, and he's talking to the bartender, and the bartender, like, they're just hanging out and talking.
Yeah, no one's there. They're watching baseball or some
and
shit.
And the bartender finally has to leave because he has to go walk his dogs or something like that.
Bill Murray says, "Hey, you want to go fucking see the show with me?" And he's like, "Dude, I got to go let my dogs out." And he knows it's Bill Murray, but he's like, he's been at work all day. He has to let his dogs out. There's going
to
be shit pissed everywhere.
I got to do this.
So later on, the the bartender got a call from the owner. Was that how it went then?
So yeah. So the guy takes off, Trevor takes off, goes home. And then, the bartender calls and says, or no, they didn't call. He comes back to work with the dogs. And when he gets to the door, the bouncer's all, fuck you, man. And he's like, what the fuck did I do? He's like, fuck you. Bill Murray just fucking walked in here asking where Trevor is. And he's like, oh no shit. So he fucking like weasels through the bar and then finds him. And Bill Murray turns around. He's all, Trevor, like fucking excited to see him and shit. Yeah. And so like someone calls someone, the fucking owner of the bar finds out Bill Murray's in there. He's like, ask him if he'll bartend. And he's like, I'm not gonna do that, man. It's kind of fucking weird. It's cool. So Bill Murray's even hanging out with me. And he's like, come on, just fucking ask him. Yeah. He's like, hey, my boss wants to know if you'll bartend. He's like, cool. Jumps behind the bar. And then the story is that people keep ordering drinks. It's like four deep at the bar. Rumor gets out, he's there. Everyone comes in, no matter what you
order.
Which
is why the owner asked
No matter what you order, fucking I'll take a fucking Budweiser. Yeah. He gives you a shot of tequila, no matter what.
No, he said just random shots. Yeah. Like whatever, whatever he said.
And then on some other interview, they said something else. Weird. Our fucking podcast. Yeah, because
one of the guys said that like whatever bottle was closest, he would just pour shots of it and give it to
you. And no one complained. Because like, he probably wasn't collecting money either.
No, exactly. Yeah.
Yeah.
But another thing in Austin, again, during South by Southwest, there was a band that was showing up just to play like a house party, like nothing big. And apparently, and I don't know how, I don't remember how this one started, but they were interviewing the person who was hosting the party, and his friend who was in the band shows up, and Bill Murray was in the car.
Bill motherfucking Murray
was in the car being the roadie, and he helped set up all the instruments for this band, sat in the corner with a tambourine playing in the background, and there's photos of it, the whole thing. And then at the end, he helped strike the band, packed everything back up in the car.
The better part about that is the cops show up for noise ordinance. Yes. The cops show up beating on the door.
Noise ordinance. Noise pollution.
Mm-mm. No, ordinance. So he goes to the door, and the cops are like, hey, man, we got like six fucking calls. People can hear you from fucking five blocks away, dude. Yeah. You guys got to turn him down. He's like, yeah, the thing is, I can't do that, man. He's like, Bill Murray's playing tambourine in the band right now, and if you want to go tell Bill Murray that he can't play tambourine in the band and we got to turn it off, you deal with
the consequences.
And he's like, come on in. And so as he's doing that, Bill Murray walks over to the door with a tambourine and starts playing the tambourine in the cop's face. And the cop's like, you're Bill Murray. He's like, I am. I'm Bill Murray. And so he keeps playing the tambourine. And then the fucking cops just come in the party and they keep playing.
Oh, man.
And that was the first time the wad of sweaty cash was mentioned because they were running low on beer.
Yeah. He puts in for
and
beer.
And he just grabbed a wad of sweaty cash.
If you're playing this tambourine like a savage, your pocket's going to be sweaty.
Yeah.
Like it's just. That's
but he told me, he's like, I can't let you do that. You're my guest. Yeah. And he's like, hey, man, check it out. I've been saving up for a while. It's cool. I'll get it. That was his line. And he fucking handed him a softball.
So if we call this episode Bill motherfucking Murray, is that going to be a
problem?
We can't
promote it.
That's fine. Let's do it.
Okay.
If you make the URL, it will not let me promote it if you make that the URL.
Right.
But we can change the URL, right?
That's true. We can change the URL.
But I don't know, things to be decided later, and there's nothing I can do about what you do.
So one of the
go ahead and change it. I'll go back and change it again. Yeah. Okay.
One of the things in the film that I thought was at first I thought it was kind of cheesy, but it really won me over.
We can block it out.
Was the philosophy of improv comedy,
the philosopher's stone,
how
of comedy.
Deep it is in Bill Murray, and that all this stuff is improv. Because the idea of improv is to never say no and to always say yes and. Mm-hmm. So if you walk on stage and someone looks at you and they're like, Dad, I haven't seen you in 20 years. You say yes. And it was a bitch being stuck in Korea. Right. And it's like, now this is established. Like, I am your dad and I just got back from Korea. Yeah.
Right.
And you have to acknowledge the Korea. I have to, like, you can't say
But didn't
no.
you move to London?
Right. Exactly. You know, right. Exactly.
I did.
Yeah, you're right. Yeah. But you
right
can't
after
say
mom
no.
died, right? Yeah.
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 Yeah. And you
Mom
just
died.
Build the scene that way. And that's the way it works. Yeah. And they say that this is like how Bill Murray lives. Like this is like all of these things.
He's living
are
improv.
Improv. Yeah. Yeah. And
which
and if
I think is a good way to live.
And if someone's like, hey, do you want to come and fucking, you know, come to my party? And he's like, yeah. And I'll do the dishes.
Yeah. Do you want
to
come on my, he's you want to come on my back?
He's
sure.
Like a, he's a yes man.
Porn syrup.
He's like a yes man in life and a no man in the movie industry.
Yeah, exactly.
He's like no to the corporate part of it, but yes to living. Yeah.
And he even talks about the fact, he says that the reason that he does the, in an interview, I think it's a Rolling Stone interview. He talks about the fact that the reason he does these little improv bits, these things are because he sees people who are just stuck in the drudgery of life. And he thinks that him showing up will help them, quote, wake the hell up.
Yeah.
And he says, if I'm having a bad day or if I'm in a doldrum and someone was able to walk in and wake me the hell up for that night,
yeah,
then I would appreciate it so much.
Because it's life-changing to them.
It is.
10 seconds of his time. That story of the eyes over
forever.
The urinal thing.
Forever
change
life.
Your life.
For life.
10 seconds.
Yeah, exactly.
Of being molested by Bill Murray.
I'm going to try that to somebody.
Yeah. And he'll take people's french fries off their plates.
Yeah, but it will change their life. They'll tell the story. You know what this motherfucker did to me in the bathroom?
True.
You know?
And
he fucked the shit out of me.
He fucked me.
Yeah, exactly. There's a really good Rolling Stone article I'll post in the show notes that talks about a lot of these bits. One of the things, and he actually does this in an interview as well. But he talks about the fact that one thing that he did, and this is one that he himself talks about, he landed in the middle of the night in San Francisco, and he had a really, really long taxi ride to wherever the hell he was going, a couple of hours of taxi ride.
Oh, that's a good story.
And he was talking to the taxi driver, and the taxi driver was talking about the fact that like his real passion is playing the saxophone. And he's like, well, you need to play the saxophone more. He's like, I can't, you know, in order to
make it. He asked him how long it had been since you played. And it was like fucking years.
Yeah, it's been forever. And he's like, you need to do it. And he's like, well, you know, I got to make ends meet. I'm driving a cab 14 hours a day. I have no time to practice.
Yeah.
And he's like, well, this is a really long cab ride. So why don't you pull over? He's like, do you have your horn? He was like, yeah, it's in the trunk. And he was like, well, then pull over.
He said, I know how to drive a car.
Yeah, I know how to drive a car. I'll drive to the location. You can play in the back seat. It's a win-win for everybody. And the guy was like, dope.
So drove the cab for 4 hours while
he played sax. Pretty cool.
And then when they got to Oakland at 2 a.m, which you do not want to be in Oakland at 2 a.m, they were hungry. And the guy was like, I know a really great barbecue place, but you probably don't want to go there. It's 2 a.m. And he was like, fuck it. You'll just play the saxophone. Everybody's going to love you.
Yeah.
So they stop. They get barbecue in Oakland.
Yeah.
He plays jazz. It's Bill motherfucking Murray.
The other thing is, and Chris Rock made this known, that you don't fuck with, if white people are in the ghetto after midnight, you don't fuck with them because they're crazy.
They must be crazy.
Yeah, it must be crazy. Like they're looking to eat people. That's
and
what
I
he
won't.
Said.
I won't go into the there's a which I only stumbled on by accident. But if you watch the movie, I won't go into it because I'll save it as a non spoiler. But there's an end credit scene after the credits of a person who was on a movie set with Bill Murray, never got a chance to meet him, and was kind of heartbroken about it. And then the last night that they're together, he goes into the bar
because he worked on the movie.
Yeah. And he goes into the bar just to have a drink, and there's a piano in the bar, and he tells this story of what happened in the bar that night. And I won't go into details because it's worth watching the movie.
It's after the credits.
You're talking about
the Bill Murray stories, right?
Yeah. Bill Murray stories movie. End credit scene, and this guy tells the story.
It's Bill Murphy is half
it's
black.
It's Bill Murphy, yeah.
That's right.
And then another thing that I saw was... He was on vacation, and I don't think this one was told with much love. This is actually told by Bill Murray. I think again in that Rolling Stone interview, he said that there were tons of people. He was on vacation at a spa.
Right.
Tons of people wanted his autograph. He was signing autographs, being really cool.
A lot of times he doesn't do autographs though. Yeah.
But he said he was really burnt out. But he had signed so many autographs, he didn't want to be a dick and not sign anybody else's. And he said this really snooty woman came up, like all dolled out in a full fur coat, and was like kind of insisting that she get an autograph.
Right.
And he said, I'll tell you what, if you let me pick you up and throw you in the pool, I'll sign an autograph for you. And she just said, yeah, you do that. Like jokingly.
And he did it.
And he picked her up and threw her in the pool and signed an autograph and set it down next to the pool and walked off.
That's awesome.
Yeah. So Bill motherfucking Murray, the movie's great. We didn't tell nearly all the stories, but they're really stories from all around the world.
And not even all in that documentary. If you just look at best Bill Murray stories on YouTube, there's a ton of fucking crazy shit. Because some of them, there wasn't any video evidence or pictures to back it up.
Right.
So most of the ones in that movie is where there was actual physical evidence, like the taking your French fry shit. That's just a story that happened.
Right.
It probably fucking happened.
It probably did.
That's the whole nobody's going to believe you line.
Right.
Which is amazing.
And if he's not your favorite actor, you might find out that he's your favorite comedian or your favorite improv person. Check him out.
Bill Murray, dope. There it is.
Groundhog's Day sucks balls. Awesome.
It does.
It's probably my favorite of his movies.
Yeah, you guys are trendy. It's all right.
That's trendy.
Yeah, that's your favorite of his movies?
I think it's my favorite of his movies. I think Groundhog Day is probably my favorite.
Man, it is. You know what? I'll do you a solid. I'll go back and rewatch it
okay.
with
neck and neck fresh. With Ghostbusters. I fucking love
Necronomicon Monicon.
Yeah.
When you said neck and neck, I was like, what did he just
I don't
say?
Know what he
neck
just said.
Neck and neck of Ghostbusters. Like, yeah. I was like,
neck with Ghostbusters. Necronomicon. Yeah. I don't know what
I heard mecha like a high mecha chani ho.
Yeah. And I heard neck and neck and Nomicon. That's fucking crazy.
So we have a social media winner, the BK Broiler, aka BKing001 on Twitter.
They Burger King won a prize.
Apparently. Yeah, the BK Broiler.
They love that broiler.
They're passionate because not a lot of people like Burger King and they're fucking owning it.
You know, Burger King sucks.
Worse than Groundhog Day.
Burger King is garbage.
You have to pick. You have to eat a BK Broiler or watch Groundhog Day.
I'll watch Groundhog Day.
Not going to get that BK sponsor. But he shared our post.
I love BK when I eat meat.
Yeah, man, their classic chicken used to be my favorite.
I used to love their classic chicken.
Back in the day, I used to eat Whopper, but it's just like not on the list anymore, man.
They're not. So that happens with fast food restaurants. Yeah. It's like, you know, Taco Bell go through a phase where it's like you can't really go to Taco Bell because it's garbage. Yeah. And then turn around, you know, 3 years later and it's like fucking, oh shit, they revamped it. Yeah. Shit's good. Yeah. You know?
Remember they had Diet Taco Bell for a while? Yeah. They had the light menu and shit.
Stop it. Stop it. Come on. Just stop it.
Hey, I didn't make it.
I know. I'm telling them to stop it.
Print Dirt Cheap is giving them a sticker pack this week for sharing our post on Twitter. We got a lot of Twitter engagement, actually. I've been impressed lately. We got a lot. So thank you for doing that. Also, thank you to El Yucateco Hot Sauce. That is our primary sponsor. They make an array of delicious. Mm-hmm. Some say equestrian, some say utopian. Many don't because they wouldn't use those terms.
You go to the website and check out all their wares.
Yeah, all their wares. Mm-hmm. But check them out. There are 7 flavors to behold. So they are sold in the grocery store. Some of them are at Target. Some of them are at Walmart. Some are at the Mexican grocery store.
I went to Walmart today. There's like 3 flavors.
Someone said they had a...
They did have black.
I like the... Someone had like 2 of a kind.
There was a lot of black
3 of a kind or a flush because they got like 5 reds or something. Oh, nice. I kind of like the poker terms. They got full house. When you have every flavor, you have a full house. Flavor. Yeah, so I like that. Let's run with it. Right. So thank you to El Yucateco Hot Sauce. Also, thank you to Print Dirt Cheap. You can go to printdirtcheap.com and use code SOFAKING to save some money. They make stickers and banners and all kinds of stuff. Letterhead, print. I think they do... They just gave us some Post-its, actually. So I have some new stuff to start throwing into packages from Print Dirt Cheap.
Things. Sticky notes.
Technically, but I think these are actually made by Post-it, so I can actually say that. Yeah, Print Dirt Cheap official Post-it notes. They're high quality.
I like sticky notes.
Yeah.
I don't like Post-it. Well, Post-it should change their name to Sticky Note.
We can start a company called Sticky Notes. Sticky I think there notes. Is, yeah.
And they're better. They stick better and leave no residue.
They hurt like a Band-Aid when you peel it off. When you peel it off the chalkboard, you got to do it fast.
Nice. Dude, you could use it as a note or a Band-Aid.
Yeah. I like it. There's an absorbent pad on the back of your note.
That's
just
what
in
your
case.
Doctor did to your arm.
Fuck, man. I have like this crazy shit I put on my arm every day. That scar is not good. It's keloid, like really fucking bad. It's thick. It's
gonna
meaty. Look.
You're like gonna be one of the black alumni's where they have the scars. You know, the black dudes do the burning.
What's
you
the
know?
Alumni?
Yeah, but part like of college dudes.
Let's just
fraternity.
Pretend to use the word in the wrong spot.
Fraternity.
Be better, yeah.
They use the wrong syllable. I don't know.
Yeah.
The fraternity guys, the black dudes, they always
burn
have
themselves?
Burns. Yeah. Isn't that a thing, Dave?
Yeah, my brother had a...
Yeah. Like an Omega sign Kappa, or something?
He had a... He built... He had a brand... Yeah.
Yes, and...
And Kappa, he had a... Kappa jaundice? Kappa jaundice?
Oh, like big, like brand on his arm from...
What's a Kappa brand?
Kappa Alpha Psi.
Kappa Alpha Psi. Yep.
Right. Well, yeah, my scar's not good when it... Yeah. At some point in time when it's short
it's gonna have
shirt
that
weather...
Worm look, it's going to look like Earthworm Jim on your arm.
It's rough, dude. I'm still covering it. The doctor's like, oh, it'll heal for like a year. So just keep putting that scar stuff on that
inside
for the next
of my
3 months.
Dude, I got 10 years on my scar inside my legs.
I know, I noticed
for
it
for the record, I haven't been paying any attention to anything you're saying.
That's fine. Go ahead.
Because I just downloaded Twitter and created a Sofa King Dave account so I can start using Twitter.
Oh shit. Go follow at Sofa King Dave on Twitter.
I just started it. If you do it like immediately, you'll be my first follower.
Yeah.
And you'll get a prize.
You motherfuckers.
And you'll get a prize.
Yeah. I'm running
out
of stamps.
Twitter. You get a twit sack.
Yeah. That's
right. You twit.
Yeah.
Yep.
I'm gonna send you a spoon because it'll hurt.
You know who can print
twit.
Stamps? PrintDirtCheap.com.
You can print stamps.
You can
at
print
stamps.com.
Stamps.com.
That's not our. Yeah,
we're not sponsored.
We're not
because that's lame.
We're also not sponsored by Charmin Ultra, but
no,
I don't like Charmin Ultra.
What's your toilet paper, bro?
Members Scott's? Mark.
Members mark.
Yeah.
Whiskey.
Sam's Club.
They don't have that.
Yeah, they do.
That's some bullshit. Mark Sam's brand. Club. That's just, you know, it's white label Charmin.
No, it's not.
Yeah, it
Charmin's
is just like
too
the whiskey.
Charmin's too soft.
There's multiple Charmins,
too
bro.
Soft.
They have multiple flavors like Teco.
I don't know. Last time my wife bought Charmin, I didn't like it. Left remnants. Had time remnants.
I've never
like,
had.
That's from 8 hours
I've
ago.
I've never had Charmin break off.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. No, it, yeah, it's too soft.
You're not eating enough fiber or something.
I don't know.
All right. Thank you to Jimmy D's Tees. They make our t-shirts.
And speaking of shit.
He can make those shirts for you as well. He also has his own wares that you can purchase from him in addition to producing your wares. So, and I think you can also use code SOFAKING or something to that effect to save some money.
Contact him and tell him that we sent you.
Yeah. Hit him up. Tell him we sent you. Go like his Instagram. Follow him on Facebook. Mm-hmm. Do the same for Printer Cheap. Do the same for Teco.
And do the same for us, you pieces of shit.
No shit. It's been rough. It's hard. Fucking Facebook has this crazy new rule. They're like, it's so confusing. They're like, hey, we denied your post because you didn't use the third-party branding tool. Yeah. And I was like, click here to find out why your post has been removed from the feed.
It's basically because you didn't pay enough.
No, I click it. It wasn't even like a paid thing. I was like,
no, it is.
What are you talking about? I was like, what did I say in here? So I was like, it's like, do you want to appeal? So I said, okay, appeal. They're like, what's, and then I go to appeal.
Which part do you want to appeal?
And it says, cause I was like, what did I do wrong? And then I go to the next page. It's like, please enter your Facebook identification number ID tag for this. I was like, what in the fuck? I can't even ask what I did wrong because I don't even know what the fuck that thing is. You know what I mean? I'm confused on what's going on.
Yeah.
Thank you, Digital Creations, for our heat
Bill motherfucking
mugs.
Murray. Yeah. Mm-hmm. That's what this is going to be.
And that's all I have actually on that rant. Go for it.
If you're on Reddit, go to r/SofaKingPodcast and join in the conversation there. Instagram, Facebook, and Twitter, we were mentioning, is at SofaKingPodcast. Apparently, at SofaKingDave, at SofaKingBrant, and I have no idea. Brant.
Mm-hmm. Brant.
So, yeah, go to him. Personal Instagrams, at SofaKingBrad, at SofaKingBrant, at SofaKingDave. Also, check out that. The Captainist _SK quotes and SofaKingPodcast art unofficial for some Tyler Mott original artwork. Of the recap of the episodes, I guess you could say. And also check out Hilgenfeld. What else? Patreon.com/SofaKingPodcast. Go there and support the show. Every dollar counts. So even if you can give us $1 a month, it's $12 a year. You get a shout out.
That's real talk. Thousands kinda, of fans. It makes a big deal. You guys think you're being cheap for a dollar? You are not.
Don't think of it that way.
Many dollars add up.
Don't think of it that way. Every dollar helps. As you've heard, we give
technically
away,
feeding hungry children.
Dave's giving away stuff on his Twitter now.
That's
we have three hot boxes. I mean, we're giving away stuff constantly.
We all have hungry children.
And a lot of it we pay for. Even though we get LU Cateco from LU Cateco,
right. It
costs money to send it out. So they're not paying us to do that. We're doing it out of the kindness of our hearts, sending it out to our fans. So if you can, like I said, every dollar helps, and we appreciate it. The end song is Brink by Lou the Human. Don't be retarded.
Yeah. You know what it is, man. It's me. I'm really out here, dog.
Could you turn the beat up a little bit in my headphones? Just that brink of insanity. Kidnapping families. Tie your baby mother up and fuck her in the family V. For bread, I go ham and cheese. Grow chia pets and sell it as Chiba. When they go to chief, it they gon' be upset. Only 20, but I've been a vet. Been a threat. Been a winner since I've been a sinner. So it's been forever. Always chasing pleasure. Find it and get bored. Leave and chase some more. Pacing for the race in store. It's all a rat race. You better get your cheese. Avoid the D's like a lesbo with the legs closed. I drive slow cause 5-0's beefing on deep block. I ate the shrooms by my nutsack and I ate the weed of my clean socks. And my team's hot, but I'm just trying to play it cool. Shoot up the playground and tell the kids to stay in school. A genius child, but I'd rather play the fool. Ignorance is blissful, don't pass the spliffs. Lose a weed laser, 97 burgundy blazer. Wanted for burglary, had to dish the mercury tracer. I'm on some loke-ish, some fed up with this being broke-ish. I'm not to joke with, bitch I don't sell crack, I smoke it.
Sorry, Mom.
I plagiarizer, say anything for some great vagina. Made my bitch fly to New York City with an eighth inside her. Walked inside her 8th grade prom, man, trying to date a minor. Then break up with her before finals, so she's too sad to graduate. I masturbate the pics of Anne Hathaway, watching Castaway. That's just me on an average day. Copped a quarter and tried to flip it, but shit, who am I kidding? Smoked the whole shit the same day, man, all in one sitting. I'm sending bad vibes out just to hear you cry about. Into the zoo around 5 at night, letting the lions out. I really lived all the shit you probably lied about. Tried about every drug twice, man, think I'm high for life. Hide your wife, hide your kids, I'm coming through the window. Fuck the money, fuck the jewels, I'm looking for Nintendo. 64, Swifty whore, tried to let me score in the Giuseppe store when I asked to have we met before. I'm on Canal Street selling fake shit for double the price. Tell them it's real when I really made this shit in my mom's basement. Having conversations with myself. Don't see nothing wrong with healthy debating. Inhaling the fragrance on a regular basis.